I want you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we'll be talking with Pennsylvania State Representative Kevin Boyle, who represents the 172nd Legislative District, Philadelphia County. Going to be here talking about his proposed legislation, and I'm sure, I don't know how you could have missed the scandal. We were in Columbus for the first part of the week, and that's all anyone was talking about. He has proposed a piece of legislation, actually making it a crime not to report any type of sexual abuse. I'm going to be honest, I thought there was already a law, but we'll talk to him about that and see where we go from there. Also, Kim Warner, a secretary and longtime Pocono Medical Center employee, as you've known over the past year, we've been talking about the contract negotiations there. Well, contract accomplished. Took more than a year, but the two sides came together. An agreement was made. We'll talk to Kim Warner about that. Also in the second hour, Jake Lake, an 11-year lineman at Verizon, going to talk about the Verizon situation. Evidently, it is getting, well, not much negotiating being completed. So the folks, some of the workers are going to walk from the Albany Occupy down to Zuccotti Park to the Occupy Wall Street event, and we'll talk a little bit about that. In the third hour, Peter Olney, director of organizing for the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, going to be here talking about what the ILWU is doing out in California to help folks who their homes are in foreclosure. And really, I mean, it's something that should be being done all over the country. You want to occupy something, occupy someone's house who's being foreclosed on. To me, that's a good place to start. So it'll be interesting to talk about that. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-7425, 1-888-520-RICK. So last night, I got to be honest, I went home from the show, flipped on the TV, and what I saw, absolutely disgraceful. If I were a parent of a Penn State student, what I saw last night, well, I think that would have caused me to say the education that's going on there, I'm not thrilled about, and I'm not going to pay for it. I don't understand going out to the streets rioting over a football coach. I don't care who he is, especially when you're talking about the rape of a 10-year-old boy. Just not getting it. Flipping over news vans, ripping poles out of the ground, not getting it. And you knew what was going to happen this morning. The right wing was going to try and tie that somehow to what's going on around the country with people in the streets. I have to be honest, there was part of me going, where's the tear gas and the rubber bullets? Maybe it would wake some of these people up. I'm just not getting it. And I don't know that I ever will. And some of the people who on Facebook and on Twitter have been out there saying, oh, we're going to defend Joe to the very end. I'm sorry, I'm not going to go there with you. In fact, Ashton Kutcher, who has 8 million followers, took a beating and evidently is suspending his Twitter use for saying, how dare you fire Joe Pa? As a Hawkeye fan, I find it in poor taste. to which New England Patriots wide receiver Chad Ochocinco. When you're getting advice on how to deal with the public from a guy like Ochocinco, you know you've really screwed up. And he says, good luck fending off all the people you've upset with your opinion, boss, which is true. And I'd love to hear your opinions on this because maybe I'm in the minority. Maybe I'm in the minority in thinking that coaches are supposed to protect players. Coaches are supposed to protect the people who are in their facilities. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but I think absolutely everyone had to know. And I guess I'm a little more personal. I have a little more personal story to go with this because I went to a high school where the athletic director was one of these godlike figures to some in the community, and he was protected by the other godlike figure in the community. They had his name plastered all over every stadium, every nanatorium, the ice rink, you name it. This guy's name was all over it. And from day one stepping into that school, I knew. Everyone knew. Rumors in the locker room. My mother told me about him years before I ever knew I was going to that school. And when it all came tumbling down, when that first person stood up and said, you know what? This is what he did to me. Hundreds, literally hundreds of people came forward. In over a 30-year span. Look, I'm sorry. You know, if you just don't wake up one day and go, I'm going to be a kid toucher today. It just doesn't happen. And when I look at this scenario, this situation, I say, this is something that everybody had to know. And you look at the way the guy retired. And look, he's been accused at this point. He's going to have his day in court. They're going to go through this whole thing. But I'm telling you right now, the floodgates are going to be open. And over the next several months, you're gonna start seeing, especially when the civil suits start coming out. Just like in the Catholic Church, the exact same thing. When the civil suits start, it is going to be an onslaught. And Penn State's gonna get hammered. But ask the question, why when this guy retired, did no other team ask him to come coach for them as a head coach? And when he did retire, this guy was a genius. This guy was someone that everybody looked up to. They issued a press release. No big fanfare, no celebration, no, hey, this is my last game, none of that. And I know you want to weigh in on it, Jake, so I'm going to give you a minute to throw your opinion in.
Well, this is multifaceted. There's going to be a lot of people hurt. It's a sad day for Penn State. It's a sad day for the state of Pennsylvania, but mostly it's a sad, sad day when the power structure in this country, I don't care if it's at a university or if it's at a high school, if those who are entrusted with the safety of our children by the taxpayers, by the public, fail the system and children are abused, it's wrong. As far as the situation at Penn State, not all the facts have come out. I personally think that it's a shame for Coach Paterno that the way it happened. I thought he should have stepped down several years ago, but for different reasons. I'm not so sure he's as guilty as some people say. I do believe the power structure up there absolutely failed. Is Joe Paterno as guilty as anyone? I think I'm going to wait and see what comes out in the future. But it is sad, sad day, and it's a disgrace. And the university is going to suffer, I'm afraid, for years to come.
Well, I think as he said, he himself, out of his own mouth, said, I should have done more.
I guess my question is, Rick, what information was given to him by the coach? And I don't understand why you would fire the president of the university, the head football coach, who's a legend, but you don't fire the coach, you don't fire the graduate assistant, who's now a full-time coach.
And he should be gone.
And absolutely. If you're firing those other people, you should fire
absolutely
McCreary.
All of them. The whole crew. Because in my opinion, there's a cancer in that program. You get rid of all of them. I don't care. Every last one of them. Because I'm of the mindset that they knew. And even if it was just, oh, I heard a rumor, there's a whisper. If you did nothing, you knew.
Well, if now just think what could have happened if McCreary at that point would have went in and whatever, beat him up or at least call him on it and call the police in. At that point, the police would have come and investigated, and perhaps we could have forestalled an awful lot of incidents that should never happen directed towards innocent children.
Well, had the police done something in the incident a year or so earlier, maybe you don't even get to that point. But they, you know, mother let the police eavesdrop in on the conversation,
yes.
And the guy said, "Oh, gee, I'm never going to get your forgiveness. I wish I were dead." Well, you know what? We can arrange that.
Well, then you get into the issue of the district attorney, who's Mr. Gregar, who's supposedly dead and has disappeared, and there's some conjecture about there's a connection there with the Penn State situation, the timeline's there. But why didn't he prosecute?
Again, it's this corrupt. And look, if you can't fire a football coach, if you can't fire a university president, if you can't fire those people for not doing the job, how are you going to justify firing a classroom teacher or a high school coach or anyone? If you can't hold everyone to account, you can hold no one to account. And to me, this is all just part of this incestuous pool that's going on there. And look, Paterno was a legend. He was absolute, without touch. And I do believe if he said boo, everyone jumped. And this was a matter of just, at that point, keeping everything in-house, keeping everything out of the news, keeping everything quiet. We'll just get rid of him. We'll move him away. He'll go off silent into the good night over to that second mile thing, and then he'll be off on his own. We won't have to deal with him. And someone else's problem.
And at the end of the day, I'm afraid too many people put the interest of the university ahead of those children. And shame on them.
And, you know, I got into a big argument with a guy the other night in Ohio about this. Because I had said, you know, McCreary at that moment should have done something, even if it's a or drop something or something, but you stop it right there. How do you, in any conscience, and I don't care who it is, how do you, in any conscience, if the allegations are true, and the grand jury said that they believed they were, they found him to be credible, how do you walk away from a 10-year-old child being sodomized? How do you do that? You know, if it's someone 16, 17, maybe you make the argument in your head, well, he's of age, he's consenting. A 10-year-old?
And one thing you have to understand, this wasn't a student. He was a graduate assistant. He was 26 years old.
Now, I don't care what he was. There was a janitor that reportedly saw Sandusky, you know, hugging and doing. Look, you don't belong. You don't. Here's the first red flag. Let me let you in on the first red flag. If your child comes home and says, "Coach so and so is showering with me," that is a huge red flag. You do not belong in showers anywhere near each other. I don't even care if they're partitioned. You don't belong in the same room. And I go back to the guy who was the athletic director of the high school that I graduated from. His office was down in the boys' locker room. He used to stand in the doorway with his arms folded and his gut hanging out, staring at all the boys walking out of the shower. And nobody thought this odd. He wasn't the gym teacher. But nobody thought this odd. And again, I go, and I guess that's why I'm so adamantly opposed to anyone going out and, well, we should give Joe one more game. No, you fire absolutely everyone. You go in there, you clean house. And I don't care if you don't play a game the rest of the season. You clear house because you have a cancer in your ranks. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, questions, comments, what do you think? Right back after this. Just nuts.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Those politicians of, by, and for the richest 1% should finally understand that working people will fight hard to ensure the survival of the middle class, and the AFL-CIO will stand with them.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka on the huge victory working people achieved in repealing the loss of public worker collective bargaining rights in Ohio. AFL-CIO election night polling showed majority opposition to the gutting of collective bargaining across demographic groups. The polling shows Ohio voters turning sharply away from Republicans and a majority of the voters holding a negative view of the GOP. The polling showed that Republicans lost the center and lost big among independent voters by attacking collective bargaining rights. Cincinnati firefighter Doug Stern.
As an active duty firefighter in Cincinnati, I'm so grateful to the people of Ohio for standing with firefighters and the other public employees to help keep our community safe and strong. In the final weeks of the election, we asked the question, who do people trust? Firefighters like myself, police officers and other public employees, or politicians? Well, yesterday, Ohioans overwhelmingly answered that they trust their public employees and they want to let them have their voice.
Trumka says the working family win in Ohio carries a very strong message to politicians everywhere in America.
The people of Ohio, from auto workers to teachers and firefighters to the building trades and public sector workers to the jobless, sent a message that will reverberate across the country that politicians need to stop scapegoating workers and pushing an extreme partisan agenda. They need to instead work to create jobs for working people and to commit to restoring balance to our economy. America right now is having a conversation about collective bargaining and inequality that in many ways began in Madison, Wisconsin, and continued through Occupy Wall Street in New York and across the country.
In Michigan, working families, spearheaded by the Michigan Education Association, made history by recalling Republican State Representative Paul Scott. On the MEA website, they headlined the news by saying, "This is what democracy looks like." MEA President Steve Cook says Scott's recall proves that voters will hold lawmakers accountable for assaults on the middle class. It's the first time in Michigan history that a Republican state lawmaker has been recalled. Representative Scott was targeted for recall for deciding to support cutting school funding while at the same time taxing pensions and giving tax handouts to corporate special interests. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. And, you know, it is, to me, it is an inside job. And you look at, from the 23-page indictment, when victim six was dropped off at home, his hair was wet. His mother immediately questioned him about this and was upset to learn the boy had showered with Sandusky. She reported the incident to the university police, who investigated. After a lengthy investigation by University Police Detective Ronald Schaefer, the investigation was closed after then-Center County District Attorney Ray Greiser decided that there would be no criminal charges. Scheffler testified that he was told to close the investigation by the director of the campus police, Thomas Harmon. The investigation included a second child, BK, also 11, who was subjected to nearly identical treatment in the shower as victim six, according to the detective. Now, here you go. Campus police chief, out. This detective should be held accountable as well. All of them, all down the line. I mean, I am so angry and ticked off that it's one of those things that I really have a hard time dealing with. It's infuriating. You know, I coach my 5-year-olds base t-ball team. I coach my daughter's basketball team. At no point in any of this, if someone were to come to me, if a kid were to come to me, or I were to see something, would I not report it? And I got to be honest, I got to think that there is something out there. I know for teachers, there's something out there that says if you don't do this, your behind goes to jail. But when we talk to the state representative in the next segment, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Let's go to the phone lines. I got James on line one. How you doing tonight, James?
Good. How you doing?
Kind of ticked off. Yourself?
I'm pissed off, and I'll tell you why. You know, first of all, the man who did all these crimes physically is definitely the devil. No question about it. Okay? But in my opinion, that Joe Paterno, I mean, he was the most powerful man in the state of Pennsylvania, period,
yep.
For how many years?
Absolutely.
And for him not to have known or to play stupid, it's just ridiculous. And anyone who believes that, believes him, it is ridiculous also. That man would have known if a fly flew through the door of his gym. He was so powerful.
Let me ask you this, James. Did you buy into the argument that he did his minimal responsibility by going to, I think it was Curley was the guy's name, going to his next superior and reporting it? Because there's some are saying the reason he hasn't been indicted or there have been no charges against him is because he did what was minimally required. He went and he said, hey, this has come out. You guys handle it.
No, I totally don't buy that at all. I'll tell you why. Because at the time when this was all going on, he was more powerful than his superior, being the head football coach of Penn State at that time.
Yeah,
and he should have took it all in his hands and dealt with it himself.
And to me, this is a failure from top to bottom. And I think, what do you think of McGrury? I mean, can you imagine yourself walking into a locker room, seeing a 60-some-year-old guy sodomizing a 10-year-old boy and not coughing, dropping something? Can you imagine yourself walking out?
Not even now. I heard what your comment was last segment about coughing or making a noise. You know what? I wouldn't have cared if the guy was 7'4" and 500 pounds and I'm 5'10" and 100 pounds. I would have gave that guy, you know, he would have known I was in that room physically.
See, because the argument that I got against that is, you know, here's this guy who holds the keys to your future. This guy was almost a god in that organization. And, you know, the story that the guy gave me was, you know, this was a heroic act for him just to report it to Paterno. I'm of the mindset he should have done something, though.
Well, I'm of the mindset, like I said, first and foremost, Sandusky, I mean, you know, to try to pass the buck or nothing is ridiculous. He is, first and foremost, the one that
absolutely
needs to be punished the worst. Okay?
Absolutely.
But as for the rest of them, they all need to be right alongside him and take their medicine because they're all guilty.
Yeah, and if Sandusky's convicted of these alleged charges, if he goes to jail, even the lowest of the low criminal scum look down on kid touchers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he will get his when he gets to jail. There's no question about it. But like I said, the rest of these characters who knew what was going on, if for any of them to say they didn't know what was going on is ridiculous. And I say that right from Paterno to his coaching staff to the faculty of that school and to all the players that were playing for Paterno at that time. Everybody knew, and if they said they don't know, they're liars.
You a Penn State fan yourself?
Excuse me?
Are you a Penn State fan?
No, I'm not. I mean, I live up in the Northeast, so I mean, you know, of course, that was it's the biggest football school in the Northeast.
Yep.
So I mean, we all did, you know, root for them. You know, that I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so a lot of the players came out of Penn State. But you know, that's the problem. And you always see it with the athletes themselves, but there is a small handful of coaches through the years that are so powerful that they think they can walk on water and get away with anything they want. And there's a fine example right here.
Yeah, good point, James. I appreciate the call, buddy. Thanks.
All right, thank you, sir. You have a good night.
You too. I go back to this, and I can't get my high school experience out of my head, and I can't get growing up in a Catholic church out of my head, where the people knew who the kid toucher priests were as well. And, you know, we lived in the poorest, one of the poorest dioceses in the city, in the area, where all of the problem priests would swing through. So there would be a pile of them at one point, and then they'd find places for them. But everybody knew. I mean, it was no secret. And that's what bothers me about this, the fact that it was no secret. And look, Sandusky goes to jail. It better not be to one of those country clubs, you know, like you see the Politicos going to. It better be a real jail.
I just read, just today, that if he's convicted on all counts, he could serve over 400 years. Now, obviously, he's not going to serve 400 years, but the rest of his life easily.
Oh, what is he, late 60s?
He's late 60s, yes.
Yeah, at the end of it, you know, he gets a 20-year sentence. Good luck getting out of that. And look, when he gets into prison, as I said, I guess there is some honor among thieves, some honor among criminals, that at the lowest rung, right there with bankers, are kid touchers. Mm. Somebody, even Jeffrey Dahmer or one of them, would look down on. And, you know, you look at this, and I just started coaching my daughter's basketball team. And it just, first practice was last night. And you can't help seeing the parents coming in, looking at you strange because of this guy. Now, every decent coach in this, in Little League, and in high school, and in college, every decent person's going to be looked at with a jaundiced eye because of a guy like this. And again, I go back to the fact that I do believe, and I think we're going to find out as time goes on, now that this is actually out in the open and the power structure that prevented this from coming out is now gone, I think you're going to see more.
Well, there are distressingly some similarities between the Catholic Church and what happened here. They both kept the problems inside the organization. They became insular. And at a certain level, I believe they felt, I don't know if above the law is the right word, but immune from the effect of the law. And that's a dangerous situation when you think that you're exempted from the laws of the land. It's...
Now, do you think, you know, because there's, on some level, I think in this country, we put so much emphasis on sports. We put so much emphasis on a paternal-like figure who was an icon in this state for years, that we do so much to insulate them, be it a good athlete, be it a good coach, that we tend to overlook. And look, I was a fairly good athlete in high school, and I got away with a lot of things that I would not have gotten away with had I not been able to, you know, kick a ball or throw a ball or hit a ball or hit somebody. I would have probably seen an awful lot more trouble. Now, granted, I probably would not have graduated from high school because I wasn't into it. I had, you know, after my mother died when I was 13, I had very little interest in anything at that point. But, you know, it was sports that brought me back and kept me in school and at least showing up. I may not have studied much. I may not have taken many tests, but I did show up and I did, you know, do what you got to do, which is why I'm a huge supporter of school athletics, which I think it's a horrible mistake to cut athletic programs from education. But, you know, I look at this and I got away with a lot of stuff. Nothing like this, however. And none of the coaches who, you know, got away with little things never got away with stuff like this either. So as a coach, as someone who's done, look, if someone were to come to me, I would be going to the ends of the earth for that kid. And I would have hoped for nothing less from someone who was a legend. And do you think this is going to tarnish his legacy 20, 30 years into the future? Because I think it's done. I think it is well tarnished.
I think to some degree, whether it's fair or not, I think you're correct. And to be fair to Paterno, he's done an awful lot of good, and it is a shame the way it ended.
Well, some would argue
this isn't over. He just today came out. He's employed a high powered lawyer, so apparently this isn't over.
Well, he's hired a lawyer to make sure that he doesn't go to jail himself. That no criminal charges come and wait till the civil trials start. Because he's open to all of that as well. And he's going to need a couple of good lawyers. But, you know, you look at this, and I guess you could make the argument that Sandusky himself has done some good for maybe one or two for kids through this program. But how many has he harmed? And how many of these programs now, how many of these programs now are going to be looked at a little differently. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, hopefully Kevin Boyle, state representative, will be here to talk about his proposed piece of legislation. I wanted to get to a couple of them, but when we come back, we're going to talk about this legislation, which I think should have been in place all along. Right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Bible does not say that money is the root of all evil. Rather, it condemns the love of money. Today, that insidious love, taking the form of greed and excess, is celebrated in our country and has even been exalted into official public policy, marring our economy with inequality and injustice. The reigning ethos of our nation's upper crust is that too much is not enough. They're not merely out to make loads of the money they love, but to make a killing, everyone else be damned. New numbers from the Congressional Budget Office confirm that as the moneyed elites have been making their killing, wealth disparity has become extreme in a country that once prided itself on trying to build a more egalitarian society. Analyzing 30 years of income data, the nonpartisan CBO reports that the richest 1% of our population has enjoyed a stunning 275% increase in their income during that time. As a result, these privileged few have more than doubled the slice of America's income pie that they consume, going from 8% to 17% of the whole in just three decades. From whom did these richest 1%ers get their extra big slice? From us, the 99%. The share going to middle class and poor families shrank in this period, which is why there is such broad support today for Occupy Wall Street's We Are the 99% movement. At the tippy top of America's wealth pyramid are the multimillionaire CEOs and billionaire Wall Streeters. They are the richest 1/100th of 1%ers, less than 15,000 households. These few now take 6% of all U.S. income, the biggest piece ever consumed by America's mega-rich. This is Jim Hightower saying, the widening chasm between the rich and the rest of us is transforming our country from a society to a jungle, and not even billionaires will enjoy living there.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there. Or if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go. So as I said, you know, there have been a couple of pieces of legislation that are being proposed, one by Dan Deasy, a Democrat from Allegheny County, who announced he plans to introduce legislation expanding the requirement on the mandatory reporting of suspected sexual abuse of a child to law enforcement. His bill would require an individual who witnesses or an individual who is told by a direct witness about a sexual crime against a child to report it to law enforcement. Failure to report such violations under this proposal could result in a third-degree felony charge, which carries up to 7 years in jail. The current mandatory reporting law only requires individuals who witness abuse to report to such institutions, since instances to their direct supervisor, which is exactly what Paterno did. Only I gotta be honest, I happen to think, we need to hold him to a much higher account. Also yesterday, State Representative Kevin Boyle announced he has a plan, that he's gonna go forward with, ensuring that people who witness the abuse of a child, that they report it to the proper authorities as well. And I've got State Representative Kevin Boyle on the line. Representative Boyle, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate being on, and I'm actually a listener of your show as well.
Oh, great. I appreciate that. You know, I look at what happened here, and it's an absolute tragedy all the way around. And I got to be honest, I do believe everyone in that program should be fired today, gone out the door. There's a cancer there, and it should be removed.
I could not agree with you more. I represent a heavily Catholic part of Northeast Philadelphia. We were at, unfortunately, my district was at the epicenter of the most recent grand jury report in relation to sex abuse from Catholic priests and also the cover-up. And so this is an issue that, you know, locally has been a big issue for me. And when I saw what was happening with Penn State just in the last couple of days, just a couple of days ago, I said, here we go again, a powerful institution. Penn State, you know, if you think of powerful Pennsylvania institutions, I think the Catholic Church and Penn State are probably, you know, either the two most powerful or two of the most three most powerful institutions. So rather than addressing sexual predators and making sure that it never happens again, both institutions sought to cover it up.
You know, and I've been talking about my own experiences. I went to a Catholic school for a number of years when I lived in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, and our diocese was very poor. So we had all the people who had problems anywhere else swing through. So you knew everybody coming through had a problem, and they'd be put somewhere else, and it was part of that whole cover up. And you would see that going on. And also when I was in high school, we had an athletic director who, for years, everyone knew he was a kid toucher and did nothing. But as soon as that one person stepped forward and the police actually did their job, hundreds came forward. Well, this happened in the 80s, all the way back into the 50s, and into different states. I mean, so this thing, I think, is going to blow up, and I think we're going to see a lot of stuff, because I don't think you just wake up and be a kid toucher one day.
No, it's certainly not. I imagine Sandusky has lived a lifetime of sexual abuse. He began the organization Second Mile back in the 1970s, and it's well known that sexual predators will seek out opportunities to abuse children.
Yep.
You know, they will, you know, court children, they'll groom them, and, you know, I'm sure he just founded this charitable organization to gain access and trust the children.
Man, you know, I got to be honest. There's part of me that goes, if I have to be that cynical, that every time, you know, someone starts a group that's going to help, you know, low income, fatherless children, I got to be honest. I don't want to live in that world. Because to be honest, I had a big brother when I was a kid, through Catholic Big Brothers Big Sisters, and he was the most wonderful person on this planet. I can't imagine being in a position where I've got to wonder now. Is that what's going on here?
You know, these creeps like Sandusky who are just, words can't express how low of an opinion I have for him. Not only do they hurt the victims and they hurt society and just confidence in when people see men coaching, you know, youth and, you know, attempting to instill morals in them, they also do a great disservice to youth organizations.
Yep.
I used to coach at a local athletic association here in the Fox Chase section of Northeast Philadelphia called Fox Rock. And one of the biggest costs now for Fox Rock is they have to do extensive background searches on any head coach or assistant coach or anyone involved in the athletic association because of these predators like Jerry Sandusky.
And to be honest, I'm holding mine in my hand because for the people watching at home, here's mine, no record. Of course, I have to go to the state police and I've got to fill out forms. I like that. I think that's a good start. I think it's a good thing so that parents have some, you know, at least a little bit of peace of mind, not too much, but a little bit so that, you know, they feel a little bit comfortable. But you know, here's the thing. I coach my daughter's basketball team. Now I've got to think every time hey, come on over here, am I touching someone? Right. It really, I think you're right. But let's talk about the law for a second, because I've always believed, and I've coached my son's team, I've coached my daughter's teams. As a coach, if someone comes to me and says, hey, this has happened, or I saw this, I'm of the mindset that I have not only a moral and ethical obligation, but also a legal obligation, that I've got to report that. Is that not true?
One might think that actually is the law, Rick, but it isn't the current law. Under the current law, basically any medical professional or health professional, any doctor, physician, psychologist, they have to report strong suspicion of abuse. In regards to schools, teachers and administrators have to report strong suspicion of sexual abuse. Missing from that legal description under our current statute in Pennsylvania are coaches. And that's what both Joe Paterno and Mike McQueary were classified under. So through a real just loophole, both McQueary and Paterno are able to avoid prosecution.
I mean, that's an absolute crime. And, you know, I look at McCreary, and I got to be honest, I hold a bit more disdain for his inaction than probably, well, I can't say that. My disdain is for all of them. But the moment you see that going on and you do nothing, drop a roll of tape, slam a locker, anything, but to stop that, I just can't, I can't get that out of my head.
Yeah, he's a very weak, immoral person. I'm not someone who likes to judge people, but how you can turn a blind eye to seeing a rape of a 10-year-old boy, and now, you know, maybe he'll argue that he was in shock, okay, and, you know, I would tend not to give him the benefit of the doubt, but let's just say he was in shock. I mean, you stay quiet about that for 8-9 years ago, except for telling your dad and also a higher-up within the Penn State administration. And you certainly know that Jerry Sandusky is involved with at-risk youth and is bringing kids to the Penn State athletic grounds and bringing them to games. And you don't do anything since 2002 about that. I have absolute contempt for Mike McQueary, and he should not be coaching Penn State on Saturday. What type of example of a man is he?
Yeah, I don't care if he's in the press box or not. To be honest, I got to be honest. I think they should all go. Absolutely every last one of them. As I said, there's a cancer there. So let me ask you, State Representative Dan Deasy has said he's going to introduce a bill as well. What's the difference between the two of them? Are they very similar? What do we think the chances of getting some legislation pushed through? I mean, because I got to imagine this is something that is not partisan. I think everybody is appalled and disgusted and angry as I am over this.
Right. Representative Todd Stevens also introduced something, and I think Tara Tuhill and Justin Simmons have a press conference on Monday. I'm sure the House Republicans will give the bill to a fairly vulnerable freshman Republican. We'll do what's right. I'll certainly co-sponsor any legislation that I see that corrects the current flaw within the law.
So let me ask you what is the perfect law? I mean, how do we deal with this stuff? Because I don't ever want to see this happen again. I don't want to see a situation where, and I had read part of the indictment in the last segment where, you know, the police were told to shut down the investigation. I mean, how high is this corruption? How high is this incompetence? How high does this cover up go?
Well, the fact that you said, and I was aware of that as well, that the police were told to shut down an investigation, it shows, first of all, the strength of the Penn State institution within the entire state of Pennsylvania, but especially in Center County. It is, Penn State rules the roost in Center County, and they were allowed to get away with whatever they wanted to get away with. Jerry Sandusky clearly admitted in front of a detective, yep, to showering with a boy in the 1998-1999 time frame. There were no charges put forth against them. And, you know, I think it's a fair assumption that I think the local authorities caved in to the pressure and the power of the Penn State institution, because we have to keep in mind this was very, very important to Penn State to keep hushed up. Reason being, Penn State yearly makes over $50 million in profits. It is the Penn State, for the prestige of the football program, has made Penn State a national player,
yep.
Not just in its football and athletic program, but it does have a knock-on effect. And now it has a great science department. It's a leading researcher in science and all types of cancer research. And because of football, they've been able to make a huge investment in the overall school. And I think that's heavily rooted in why they did everything to cover this up.
Which is why I've seen it referred to as a company town, basically.
Oh, absolutely. And again, when we started this conversation, I spoke about the parallels between the Catholic Church and Penn State. I think they are so clearly similar, and it's just so sickening because the purpose of the Catholic Church, specifically Catholic schools, is to provide a great education and values to young people. And the purpose of the Penn State institution was to provide a world-class education and provide moral character and training to the young people. And what type of example of both institutions instilled in the people that are in their schools now?
Yeah, excellent point. Last question I've got for you. You know, you mentioned moral character, and you mentioned, you know, part of being the community and all that. Were you as disgusted by the displays last night? Because I got to be honest, I flipped on the TV when I got home last night. I saw a riot in State College over the firing of a football coach. Yet, are we going to see? Where's the riots for those 10-year-old kids? Where's the anger toward the cover up? Where's the anger towards the power structure that allowed that?
I think that was the clearest example of the misplaced priorities of many people in our society. We get caught, you know, I'm a sports fan. I like all the Philadelphia sports fans, and I like Notre Dame for college football. But too often people get caught up in sports, and, you know, we do it. I know it's a cliche, but we remember it's just a game.
Yeah.
And whether your team wins or loses, it really doesn't matter. I know Penn State's the 12th ranked football team in the country right now, and they're undefeated in the Big Ten, but that's not important compared to protecting 10-year-olds from being raped from former assistant coaches in the Penn State locker room.
Yeah,
you can't protect the young people of Pennsylvania, you have absolutely no role to play in being a college football coach or an athletic director or the president of our biggest and finest or one of our finest universities in Pennsylvania.
And I would argue not even someone who should be selling peanuts in the stands.
Absolutely.
Representative Kevin Boyle, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the legislation. Anything we can do to help, we're always here. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. I'll see you soon.
I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. The Tea Party guy, Joe Walsh, at it again. You're not going to believe Deadbeat Dad's latest outburst. Back after this.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so, but now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now. This credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Let's have a tea party like the Rollers do. We'll serve the finest tea and fancy cookies too. Let's go to the neighborhood inviting everyone. Let's have a tea party, won't it be fun?
Oh, yes, the tea party. The tea party. The tea party hero, Joe Walsh. Republican from Illinois, deadbeat dad, owes his wife $117,000 in back child support. I guess he never had it really a job, so he just kept saying, oh, honey, I'll pay you someday. Trust me. Then, you know, he runs for Congress, loans himself $35,000. Wife's going, well, where'd that come from? You said you didn't have any money. We're here eating store brand cheese and macaroni. We can't even get the good stuff. And you're loaning yourself $35,000? Deadbeat. Well, the deadbeat showed up at a bar where, you know, he decided he was going to start shouting people down. And this guy asked him a question. Well, maybe he didn't. You know, I hate when I do this. I always seem to forget to plug in the main cord. So here you go. Now I'll play it.
The people, Paulson and whoever else, that keep going from a big bank, then they go into Fed government, then they go back into the banks, and they just keep rotating.
I agree with you about that. That's not the problem. That's not the problem. The problem is you got to be consistent. And I don't want government meddling in the marketplace. Yeah, they move from Goldman Sachs to the White House. I understand all of that. But you gotta be consistent. And it's not the private marketplace that created this mess.
Well, actually, Joe, it is the private marketplace. What happened is if you look at the vast majority, high 80% of all of the subprime mortgages were written by people who were private sector banks. Had nothing to do with Freddie and Fannie. All of the subprime stuff done by the banksters who wanted to turn a quick buck. And they brought down everybody else. Had very little to do with the other part of this. But it's a nice frame that they keep throwing out. And he's got to do it. And he says, I agree with you. He agrees. It's a swinging door. Does he have any idea how to fix it? No. He goes on.
What created this mess is your government. Which has demanded for years that everybody be in a home. And we've made it as easy as possible for people to be in homes. All the marketplace does is respond to what the government does. The government sets the rules. Don't blame banks and don't blame the marketplace for the mess we're in right now. I am tired of hearing that crap.
So... the marketplace never makes mistakes. All of the greed, and this is his ideology. This is his belief that there should be no oversight of the banks. There should be no accountability. There should be no one watching, no cop on the corner. The marketplace should do whatever it wants to do so that you can have a handful of people who can manipulate the system and fill their pockets. That's his world. That's his force-fed ideology. Somehow he listened to a radio program once and they said, oh, that sounds good. And that's where he's going. He goes on with this, and another one. I just gotta love it.
Fighting the situation, taking in money out of people they know they couldn't
afford
it.
There are already mechanisms in place. No, you know what? Because this pisses me off. Too many people don't listen. There are already mechanisms in place to do that. Are they doing their job? No. But what do you want to do? You want to bombard them with more regulations, mm-hmm. more government? Government screwed this problem up. What do you want? Well, you know what you've got? You know what you've got? You got Dodd-Frank.
The banks left.
You got Dodd-Frank now that's tying everybody's hands. You want more reform, more regulation? That's what you got. John, do you want more regulation? Is that what you want? Do you want Dodd-Frank? Is that what you want?
It sounds like this guy's just lost his mind.
Say back at Joe's bar.
I need more coffee. It's so decaf. Quiet for a minute.
Hang on.
Quiet for a minute.
What did I say?
Quiet for a minute, or I'm going to ask you to leave.
So there you go. He had his lip. That was just part of it. But, you know, he, obviously his defense then was, Jake, that he was drinking too much coffee. Had an empty stomach, was drinking too much coffee. Even though the folks are saying, hey, you better drink decaf because you're really losing your mind. And he was. I mean, is that the way you want your congressman to act? But here's the thing. He talked about Dodd-Frank. And he talked about, what do you want, more regulations? And the answer is yes. We want to go back to the way things used to be. Glass-Steagall, one of the things that the people on Occupy Wall Street have come up with, one of the things I've been talking about for years, and a caller into one of these radio programs that Paul Ryan was on asked the question. He said, has there been a separation with the removal of Glass-Steagall and the uptick rule to let Wall Street go wild? He said, when is someone going to put this back in place? He says, we need to put back in place to help stabilize things. We need Glass-Steagall. And Paul Ryan, I mean, and this is just blew my mind. He said, yeah, I agree with that. He said, mixing banking and commerce, meaning allowing banks to go do non-banking activities and leveraging their deposits. He said, the way I look at this, there's a lot of merit to what you just said. If the banks want to make hedge fund-like returns, they should then go be hedge funds. He said, but if you want to be a bank, then be a bank. Don't try and be a hedge fund and take undue risk with your depositors' money. He says, so the way I see it, we need to have more conservative leverage limits so you can't leverage too much and keep these firms within silos where they're supposed to operate based on the degree of risk that they're supposed to take. He said, and if you're just talking deposits, then I think we need to reestablish some of those limits. Now, this is Paul Ryan, Mr. We don't need Dodd-Frank. Now, understand, Dodd-Frank does not go anywhere near as far as Glass-Steagall. Nowhere near. But he's one of the people out on the forefront of this. One of the people who right out there saying, oh, get rid of Dodd-Frank. Let's get rid of all of that regulation. We don't need more regulation. Paul Ryan is saying Glass-Steagall. Now, you look at what happened yesterday. Newt Gingrich came out and said, in retrospect, repealing Glass-Steagall was probably a mistake. Bill Clinton, in his book, I made some mistakes, too, signing the repealing of Glass-Steagall Act. Uh-huh. And what happened? When you repealed Glass-Steagall, what happened? We saw mega banks just sprout up. You saw Citigroup. You saw J.P. Morgan Chase. And what are we hearing now? I mean, Obama and the administration tried. They're trying to go backwards. They're trying to rein in the animals that were let loose. And the Republicans are doing everything they can possibly do to block every portion of any sane regulation to hold these people accountable. And it's nuts. Just absolutely nuts. But when Paul Ryan comes out and says, we should have glass, something like, if you want to be a hedge fund, be a hedge fund. If you want to be a bank, be a bank. And I think I have said that, probably 1,000 times? If you want to be a gambling casino, I don't mind you being a gambling casino. Just let people know that you're a gambling casino. If you're going to be a boring old bank where I go get my car loan and pay 2%, or I get, I do my banking and my checking and my savings, be one of those. But understand your profit margins are going to be thinner. So when Clinton signed the Graham-Leach-Bliley bill, took all those limits off, and those banks became gambling casinos. And no one bothered to tell us. We didn't know we were putting our money into gambling casinos. We didn't know that our savings were going into leveraging more and more bad debt. Didn't know that. And obviously, neither does Joe Walsh. And all I ask is that he pay his deadbeat bill. And I hope his wife sues the shirt off of his back because I find that absolutely disgusting. And I'm predicting he's going to get crushed in the next election. So good riddance. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this with Jake Lake, a Verizon worker. We're going to talk about the contract, what's going on, and the walk that's coming. Stick around right back after this. I just don't need one.
uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Those politicians of, by, and for the richest 1% should finally understand that working people will fight hard to ensure the survival of the middle class. And the AFL-CIO will stand with them.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka on the huge victory working people achieved in repealing the loss of public worker collective bargaining rights in Ohio. AFL-CIO election night polling showed majority opposition to the gutting of collective bargaining across demographic groups. The polling shows Ohio voters turning sharply away from Republicans and a majority of the voters holding a negative view of the GOP. The polling showed that Republicans lost the center and lost big among independent voters by attacking collective bargaining rights. Cincinnati firefighter Doug Stern.
As an active duty firefighter in Cincinnati, I'm so grateful to the people of Ohio for standing with firefighters and the other public employees to help keep our community safe and strong. In the final weeks of the election, we asked the question, who do people trust? Firefighters like myself, police officers and other public employees, or politicians? Well, yesterday, Ohioans overwhelmingly answered that they trust their public employees and they want to let them have their voice.
Trumka says the working family, WIN in Ohio, carries a very strong message to politicians everywhere in America.
The people of Ohio, from auto workers to teachers and firefighters to the building trades and public sector workers to the jobless, send a message that will reverberate across the country that politicians need to stop scapegoating workers and pushing an extreme partisan agenda. They need to instead work to create jobs for working people and to commit to restoring balance to our economy. America right now is having a conversation about collective bargaining and inequality that in many ways began in Madison, Wisconsin, and continued through Occupy Wall Street in New York and across the country.
In Michigan, working families, spearheaded by the Michigan Education Association, made history by recalling Republican State Representative Paul Scott. On the MEA website, they headlined the news by saying, "This is what democracy looks like." MEA President Steve Cook says Scott's recall proves that voters will hold lawmakers accountable for assaults on the middle class. It's the first time in Michigan history that a Republican state lawmaker has been recalled. Representative Scott was targeted for recall for deciding to support cutting school funding while at the same time taxing pensions and giving tax handouts to corporate special interests. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com, or you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So this coming weekend, I believe it is, there is going to be, November 17th is going to be the day of action, but they're beginning a 8-day, 150-mile walk from Occupy Albany down to Zuccotti Park in Lower Manhattan, where the folks at Occupy Wall Street are. This 8-day walk is going to be a number of Verizon workers who they were on strike for a little bit. Then they agreed to come back to work and say, okay, you know, things are falling apart. And if you remember, the videos were kind of hilarious, watching these guys try and fix light poles and try and do the job. The one guy who belted himself to the box and then couldn't figure out how to open the doors that he was belted to, that was one of my favorite. I mean, you can't even write that kind of stuff. But, you know, the workers agreed to come back, and, you know, the big storms hit, and people's service was put back in place, and the company made it through. But there's been, from what I understand, virtually no movement whatsoever. And so this big march is going to go on, this eight-day march, and they say about a dozen workers are going to make the entire trip. But, you know, most will take legs of it. You know, you'll do a day here and you'll walk and do that. But at the end of it, what's going on is they're trying to highlight the fact that Verizon's trying to eliminate their pensions. They're trying to offshore their jobs. They're trying to outsource this stuff. And again, you're talking about cutting benefits, talking about cutting wages, cutting job security, and in the end, basically doing away with their jobs. Now understand, Verizon made $22.5 billion in the last 4.5 years. They paid their top five corporate executives $258 million in the last 4.5 years. And how do they do that? Well, they do that because they're trying to cut wages. They're trying to cut benefits. If they can take from you, the working people, they can give to themselves. I mean, just look at the numbers that we've seen over the last couple of weeks. The one from the CBO that said the top 1% of this country, their after-tax income rose by 275% from 1979 to 2007. You and me saw maybe a 50% increase. But if you're at the bottom 18%, that's not even keeping up with the price of macaroni and cheese. That's not even being able to put a meal on the table occasionally. It's pretty much the end of it. But at the end, you know, all I hear is my Tea Party people going, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. I look at this situation right here. This is redistribution of wealth. This is taking it from the workers and handing it to the CEOs. That simple. That's simple. It looks like we're not going to get Jake Lake, so we're just going to move along. Because now, you know, I look at this, and again, it's another one of those moments where now you're going to have to come and you're going to have to fight this fight over again. And we will see where this goes, and we're going to keep up on it as the days go by. Going back to Joe Walsh, the guy who rant and rave and carrying on, one of the people that he was talking to, and the woman who probably asked the most questions, was a woman named Melissa Rakestraw. She happens to be a postal worker. And, you know, she asked him about the pension plan for postal workers. Because what's going on there is, you know, the government is mandating that the Postal Service prepay pensions for, 50, 75 years into the future. And they're going, hey, you know, 75 years in the future, that's a bit extreme, don't you think? And the answer is yes. So she asked about this. What are you going to do? And he said, I don't care about the loss of public sector jobs. Could care less. Don't care whatsoever. And, you know, he responded the next day with your basic right-wing talking point, which was, you know, when we're talking about creating jobs in this country, we're not talking about government jobs. We're talking about private sector jobs. And he said, dang, that's the point I was trying to get across. And you look at the numbers that have been coming out. You know, you look at the fact that, what was it, last Friday they came out with the jobs numbers, 108,000 jobs created in the private sector, 24,000 jobs lost in the public sector. So we had an overall 80,000 number. That isn't even close to keeping up with demographics. But it's this assault on the public sector. And if you look at the report by the folks over at the Keystone Research Center, I think they put it quite aptly. Public sector job losses are putting a brake on Pennsylvania's recovery. In fact, our unemployment rate's going up because you've got the Republicans who have this cut, gut, and punish mentality. So the more jobs we lose in the public sector, it doesn't matter what we create in the private sector because it ends up being a zero-sum game and we still end up losing. I'm of the mindset that every job is important. Those postal worker jobs, they're important. because they put decent wages in people's pockets. They put money in their pockets so that they can patronize the store that the local private sector job crater owns. It's about keeping money in the economy. And it's something we better figure out and write quick. Anyway, I've got Bob Masters on the line. He's the political director of Region 1 for CWA to talk about the march from Occupy Albany down to Occupy Wall Street. Bob, thanks for taking time for me.
Glad to be on. How are you doing?
I'm great. I got to be honest. I thought the Verizon thing was coming to a conclusion. The strike happened. Everyone went back to work. The workers helped the company catch back up after all the things that were breaking down and the hysterical videos I was watching. What's going on?
Well, I mean, we went on strike for 2 weeks in August, hoping that we had convinced the company to begin to bargain in good faith. Said they were willing to do that, but we've been back at the table now for a couple of months, and you know, we see that the company is still apparently intent on destroying middle class jobs, and so the battle goes on. And this is a campaign that we've launched now to highlight Verizon as the poster child for corporate greed, and to let them know that we're not backing down.
So let's talk about this march that you guys are undertaking. You're going to walk all the way from Albany down to the lower Manhattan, 8 days.
That's the plan. We've got about a dozen marchers and some folks from Occupy Wall Street who have left this morning from Albany, and we marched about 20 miles today down to a little town called Stuyvesant, right next to the Hudson River, and tomorrow we pick it up again and head south, and a week from now we're going to hook up with the giant rally that Labor and Occupy Wall Street are putting together on November 17th.
You know, and you look at this, and I've been calling for people to take to the streets, and this is just an extreme version of people taking to the streets. I'm in favor of, you know, occupying a capital. I don't know about walking 150 miles. So good on them.
Yeah, well, it's we've gotten a really good response, a couple of folks turned out to greet us in Stuyvesant, which I'm telling you is a very small town there right along the Hudson. I never heard of it before. We found it on the map as the place to get to today. Folks saw us on Facebook and got some emails from the Hudson Valley Area Labor Federation, showed up to greet us with some nice cold beers when we got to the end of the march. So that was just great. Yeah. And we're expecting some great events along the way.
So the idea is this is an educational march, telling people about, you know, the company wanting to do what most American companies want to do, steal your pension, steal your wages, and get rid of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those you hit the nail on the head in terms of the issues, you know, force active and retired members both to pay thousands of dollars for their health care, freeze current pensions, eliminate pensions for future employees, eliminate job security. The pension issue really kind of stands out as a symbol of what's wrong. I mean, they're basically saying, so what? We made $22.5 billion over the last 4 years, paid our top five executives $258 million. It doesn't matter. Nobody has a pension, so you shouldn't have a pension either.
And that seems to be the mentality. You know, I was in Ohio for the last couple of days, covering the big victory there yesterday or day before yesterday with the issue number 2 over SB 5. And, you know, part of the conversation I had with people is, you know, why is it that we look at each other and say, instead of me saying, you know, Bob, you've got a pension, you've got health care, you know, how do I get it? We're saying you don't deserve it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we as CWA were very involved in that same fight in New Jersey where we had a number of turncoat Democrats who helped Chris Christie take away our rights to bargain over health care for public employees for the next 4 years. And it's a huge problem because the politics of resentment are very powerful. And there is this way in which, you know, taxpayers are being told, well, if they don't have it, your taxes will go down. But I think that what we've seen in this country, especially since Occupy Wall Street, exploded, nationally and really changed the debate, is that there's a shift going on. And in truth, and I think we talked about this in August back during the strike, we felt it then. And in a way, it was a kind of premonition of Occupy Wall Street, that people were really taking our side and understanding it's not worker against worker. It's the big companies and the big banks and Wall Street that have screwed everybody else.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for our members at Verizon, when, you know, we've marched with them, with the Occupy Wall Street folks a number of times now, you know, the chant, they got bailed out, we got sold out, really resonates. And people really feel like, you know, Verizon's the 1%. Their top executives are in the top 0.1%, you know, the 258 million crowd. You know, this is what it's all about.
And what I'm most encouraged about is I think the education process that I saw happen in Ohio, as they went to the streets and they knocked on doors and they had face-to-face conversations, not just sending out an email or a flyer, but actually talking to people face-to-face about real issues like wealth inequality, like the fact that, you know, we have 50 million people living in poverty, issues that I find really important instead of the, you know, the Michael Jackson stuff or the runaway bride or that infotainment stuff they try and distract us with, that we're actually talking about real issues about how to make our lives better.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I do think it's there's been a big shift. And I think that, you know, you see the polls that show that, you know, 55% of the American public agrees with the goals of Occupy Wall Street. I think that the 99% are finally waking up to the fact that we are the 99% and that we are getting royally screwed by the 1%, and it's time to start making them pay their fair share and starting to protect the living standards of the broad, majority of American people. So, that's the sentiment that we're trying to tap into here. We had a great kickoff rally in Albany this morning. We're headed for a Verizon Wireless store in Hudson, which is another small city along the Hudson River, tomorrow at noon, then down to Catskill and on to Kingston and Poughkeepsie over the next couple of days. And then, by Wednesday, we're going to be in Westchester. Next Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll be in Westchester and headed down through the Bronx and into New York City. So we're pretty excited about it.
Excellent.
Our legs are sore, but our spirits are pretty high.
Well, I look forward to hearing more as this goes on. I would love to have folks call in from the places that you stop, because this is what I find to be the most effective: direct action, people in the streets, people actually talking to people. That's what I like.
Yep, I couldn't agree with you more. So you just let us know how we can be in touch, and we'll be happy to call in and keep you up to breath with what we're doing.
Thank you so much, Bob Master.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Bible does not say that money is the root of all evil. Rather, it condemns the love of money. Today, that insidious love, taking the form of greed and excess, is celebrated in our country and has even been exalted into official public policy, marring our economy with inequality and injustice. The reigning ethos of our nation's upper crust is that too much is not enough. They're not merely out to make loads of the money they love, but to make a killing, everyone else be damned. New numbers from the Congressional Budget Office confirm that as the moneyed elites have been making their killing, wealth disparity has become extreme in a country that once prided itself on trying to build a more egalitarian society. Analyzing 30 years of income data, the nonpartisan CBO reports that the richest 1% of our population has enjoyed a stunning 275% increase in their income during that time. As a result, these privileged few have more than doubled the slice of America's income pie that they consume, going from 8% to 17% of the whole in just 3 decades. From whom did these richest 1%ers get their extra big slice? From us, the 99%. The share going to middle class and poor families shrank in this period, which is why there is such broad support today for Occupy Wall Street's We Are the 99% movement. At the tippy top of America's wealth pyramid are the multimillionaire CEOs and billionaire Wall Streeters. They are the richest 1/100th of 1%ers, less than 15,000 households.
These few now take 6% of all U.S. income, the biggest piece ever consumed by America's mega-rich. This is Jim Hightower saying, the widening chasm between the rich and the rest of us is transforming our country from a society to a jungle, and not even billionaires will enjoy living there. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
So the trade deficit with China has shrunk, as has the overall trade deficit, something that I talk about quite often. In fact, it dropped down from $44.9 billion overall to $43.1 billion. And with China, it dropped from $29 billion in the month of August down to $28.1 billion. Still a huge, huge number. In fact, we're on pace to break last year's numbers. And again, you know, I look at this and we talk about debt, we talk about deficits. This is the big number to me. We have just in the 1 month, $43 billion in trade deficit, yet one country, we have a deficit with $28 billion with. That is a massive chunk. And now you see that, I don't know if you've seen this, but Black Friday, I guess, is going to begin early because of Walmart. You see, what happened is Target thought they'd get the jump. So Target said, we're going to be open at midnight, Thanksgiving, you know, Friday morning, midnight. Come midnight, get all the great deals. And you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that they've listed that they've got from China. So Walmart, not to be outdone, I guess we're not going to have Black Friday anymore. It's going to be Black Thursday evening because Walmart is going to open up Thursday night at 10 p.m. Why not just have, you know, just have turkey dinner right there in one of the aisles? In fact, sell it on a stick so as they come through, they can eat it while they're buying their cheap plastic crap from China. And the only economy we're really boosting is the Chinese economy. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been getting a whole ton of emails from people who, you know, and you gotta love these people who, they seem to be the folks who own hair salons and nail places. I would say it's the Koreans that own the nail place. But they put out these emails. Don't buy any of that cheap. Don't buy the cheap stuff from China. Buy a gift certificate to get your nails done. Or get your toes, like you do, get your toes done. And I guess it's a good idea, you know. But I'm sure some big organization is behind it, but Walmart has unleashed the new deals. So if you want to look that up, I'm not promoting it, but they've got a bunch of deals that you just can't believe. They're eye-popping. So get there at 10 o'clock and you know, make sure you don't eat enough turkey because you don't want tryptamine, to put you to sleep. So you can get out there and you can get your deals because I just love this. And the reality is we're losing the country because it just goes. We just, here, take it. Take our industries. Take our steel. Take our manufacturing. Take it all. Gone. So when the solar world people, come up with this coalition for American solar manufacturing, which is a group of seven U.S. solar producers, the steel workers join in with them. Say, you know what? You're right. There ought to be tariffs. We ought to be making sure that there are tariffs in place so that, you know what? We don't lose this industry. Now, this guy named Gordon Brisner, the president of the German-based solar world, he is the head of this, saying, you know what? You need to save U.S. industry. A German president of a German company saying, America, you need to save your industry. Why aren't we thinking this sort of stuff for ourselves? I'm just losing my mind on this. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. I got Mike on line one. How you doing tonight, Mike?
Hey, Rick.
What's on your mind?
after last night's Republican debate, if you want to call it that, just kind of wondered if maybe, considering the fact that Rick Perry has now done his Sharon Angle, Christine O'Donnell, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann bit, should somebody send him a miniskirt?
Absolutely. Get him a miniskirt. Well, actually, you know, I think we ought to get him a cup. Because we got to test him.
Do you remember what he forgot in the three things he wants to close down?
Department of Energy.
Wasn't that what he came up to Pennsylvania to talk about?
Absolutely. But here's the thing.
Isn't that something they have in Texas?
No, not Texas. You know, just cattle, right?
Shut down the FDA or the agricultural department.
I kind of felt sorry for him in a way because all the people who, you know, have been sniping at him are trying to help him. They're throwing things out. EPA! Yeah, the EPA. I mean, he could have thrown anything out, and I think he would have repeated it.
Yeah, Ron Paul got him to say EPA. I saw that, and I thought that was ridiculous. But, you know.
It's funny stuff, though.
What's going on up there at Penn State with Paterno?
Well, he's fired, as he should
be. I know
be.
That, but I mean the people out there protesting it that weren't out protesting what the banks have done.
An excellent point, and they weren't protesting what Sandusky was doing. Look, I got to tell you, I started the show off, and I don't know if you heard it, but I'm as disgusted as anybody. I think it was disgraceful what they did, but, you know, that's mob mentality.
Have you heard the thing about how Bank of America... you know what the national debt is, right? It's about $15 trillion.
About $14.4.
Yeah, let's go 15. It's easier to multiply by.
Okay.
It's only $14.4. That's not that bad. That's only up about 2.5 from what Bush left it. But the thing is, say around $15 trillion, Bank of America wants to put their derivatives into the FDIC-protected portion of their bank.
Yeah, and FDIC is screaming, no.
Yeah. $75 trillion, over five times our current national debt. And I haven't heard any Republican that was out there complaining about raising the national debt limit by $500 billion or so over the summer say word one about it. I didn't hear anything in the debates about it.
Yeah, but also on that point, I mean, it's that's what the risk level is.
Yeah.
That's if every person in the country decided, you know what, I'm not going to pay my mortgage. That's probably not going to happen, but it is a huge risk load.
Well, it's
and
not
if we're,
just Bank of America.
Well, it's all of them.
There's another one with $79 trillion. All these derivatives are bets.
Yep.
I mean, we run a bet. Will Rick Perry still be in the presidential race next week? And we have people bet on that. Then we have another bet. Will Rick Perry not be in the presidential race next week? And we run a bet on that. And that's what the derivatives are. They're nothing other than bets.
And they're insured bets at that. And they're insured as well, so you can't lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I don't hear anybody saying the market there needs to correct itself.
No, I mean, what kind of insurance company would give insurance on that kind of bet?
Well, a bad one. And here again, I say let them go broke.
Yeah, probably like AIG was doing. And then remember what AIG, when they got the money and didn't go broke, did? They went out and spent $400,000 on a resort for their executives, which included, I think, $14,000 or something like that for massages.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a hard day's work negotiating for all that money.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's people out here that didn't make $14,000 in the last year in income, and these clowns are spending it on massages.
Well, we've got to take care of our pampered class.
Yeah.
Now, understand, Mike, we've got a billionaire class. We should be proud of that.
But, well, now, just wanted to call and ask you if you
it.
Thought that Rick Perry deserved a miniskirt.
I think he deserves a lot of things.
Okay, well, take care of that.
Have a good night, Mike.
Yeah,
thanks
bye-bye.
So much. Anyway, you know, again, you know, I look at the FDIC thing, and I hope that the head of the FDIC is smart enough to say, let me think about this. Hell no. You know, why exactly would I want that chocolate-covered turd? That's your baby. You deal with it. You birthed it. You figure it out. If we're going to bail anybody out, we're bailing out the people at the bottom, like I said from the beginning. If we're going to take on that kind of risk, we're going to make those at the bottom whole, and we're going to haircut the people at the top. That's the way it should be. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
All right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events. Accidents, critical illness, disability, or death? No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember to check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast there at the website. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. So, you know, over the last year, we've been following this story out at Pocono Medical Center. We went out to one of the huge rallies they had, some 5,000 people. We'd gone out to one of the strike day they had. A lot of action for folks to get a contract. Well, finally, as of Tuesday, the nearly 550 employees there at Pocono Medical Center, they voted by 92% to ratify a new contract. I think it's fantastic. And when I've asked Kim Warner, she's a secretary on the cardiovascular, never mind. Kim, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Say the word for me.
Telemetry.
There you go, telemetry. I knew I would get it. Congratulations. First, I guess that's in order. You guys have done a remarkable job of sticking together and fighting through this, so congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk about the road to victory here. This was not an easy task, was it?
No, it was not. It was a very long and tedious road to be achieving our goal that we wanted.
And, you know, at the end of this, you know, when you look back at it, could you make the argument that there's something broken about our labor law, that you guys had to go through all the hoops and jump through all the hoops that you had to get to this day?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt, this is America. We have our right to speak and be heard.
So at the end of this, 92% voted to ratify the contract. That's pretty impressive. It tells me there must be a pretty good contract.
It's a fair and decent contract, and overwhelmingly our members ratified it.
So tell me some of the good stuff that's in it. I understand it's a 2-year deal.
Right. It expires October 31st of 2013. We insured our health care benefits at low cost. One of the biggest things that came out of it was the workers that come in and start, the starting salary prior to this contract was $8.16. Now when you walk in the door at Boca Medical Center, you will be making a starting salary of $9.50.
Good for them.
It helps them put food on their table and give back to the community.
I mean, I got to be honest with you. You know, before you go on, $8.16 an hour, that's poverty wage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People could not even put food on their table. And you can't regenerate the money back into the community if you don't have it to regenerate back into the community.
$8.16. This is a very profitable hospital, is it not?
Yes, it is. It is a very profitable hospital.
What job would someone do for $8? I mean, that is just outrageous.
That was our housekeepers. That was the people who keep your room clean. It is the transporters who transport patients back and forth to different departments. It was our dietary people who take care of the patients and bring them food every day. Those are the people who are starting at $8.15 an hour.
And I gotta think that those are some of the most important people in there. I want the hospital clean, and I want it done well because germs, the hospital is a germ haven. So you want to be able to clean that stuff up. The people who are pushing me around, I don't want them running me off the cliff or anything. And the people who bring me my food, I think I want qualified people. Doesn't that make some sense?
Yes, it does. It absolutely does, without a doubt. And that's probably one of our biggest achievements in this contract, is bringing these people up to where they deserve to be paid for what they do.
Outstanding. Anything on the pension front?
Our pension is safe and secure. The hospital will not be rolling it over to a 401k.
Excellent.
So everyone will be secured after the 5 years that takes to be vested. They will have a pension at retirement.
Good for them.
That's another big victory for us.
Absolutely. You know, I go with Ohio, what happened in Ohio, a huge victory for workers. I look at this, a huge victory for you folks there, and it's and beyond the wages, beyond the pension, beyond the benefits. It adds for some voice on the job, and it adds for some say in what goes on, correct?
That's correct. And, you know, management across this country does not have the right to tell workers what to do. The workers do have a voice. And if we were the beginning and we are the starting point, so be it. But it sends a message to management across this country that they need to allow their workers to have a voice.
And I got to be honest with you, you know, Kim, if I'm the owner of a hospital or if I'm running a hospital, I want the person who's closest to the task. I want you to be able to have the say, hey, something could be done better, something could be done differently, or hey, there's a mistake here. I want someone closer to the task to feel empowered, that they can speak up and they can change things.
That's what we all work for. That we're patient advocates. We're fighting for those patients. Those people who come in off the street, the community, that's who we fight for.
Because I can barely say telemetry.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I can barely say telemetry. You know, I walk into a hospital and you go, you know, I want somebody who, you know, who's doing your job to be well paid, to be well, you know, to feel empowered. Because I don't know what it is you do. I don't know what the nurse does. I don't know what these folks do. But I want them to be rested. I want them to be, you know, empowered. And I want them to be well paid.
Right, and we did. We achieved what we wanted, and again, the biggest victory probably was bringing those workers up to $9.50 an hour.
That's excellent. And I would have to say, you know, probably as I watched this whole thing unfold, and we were there reporting on what was going on, I saw your group come together, and it's, you know, when you go through, I guess it's like a war. When you go through something like this, I have to imagine it pulls people closer together and makes you want to fight that much harder.
It does, and we were bonded over a common goal, and it was a family, and that was what was important. And as a family, we worked together to achieve something, and we did achieve something pretty great.
And something that's going to be long-lasting, and hopefully in 2 years when this happens again, when you have to go back into contract negotiations, you don't have to go through all of this. Because as I understand it, one of the bigwigs there was pushing to make it an open shop to where basically you had no rights.
Absolutely.
They were trying to weaken what you had, and that's what this was really about. It was about nothing else but that, I thought.
Right, and we maintained the closed shop. We maintain the closed shop.
Why is that important?
That was important so we stay united and we stay close and we stay strong and we all have a voice for the patient. That was important to us.
Yeah, an excellent win. I'm happy for you guys, and you know, because I met many people that worked there, and I'm happy for everyone there. I think this is a great victory for the folks at the Pocono Medical Center. Congratulations! Congratulate all your coworkers for me. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for talking to me.
Alrighty, and again, you know, another one of these great labor victories where, you know. Had they not been united, had they not had a union, had they not stuck together, they would have had some pretty nasty, draconian things imposed on them. This is what you're going to get, like it or not. Take it! Instead, they said, no, we're going to stand up, we're going to fight back, and we're going to make sure that, you know what? We're all right. Let's take a quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse, because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
Yeah, he stepped in it again, and deep, up to the knee. I think he's waist deep in it. And I think at this point he ought to just come out and say, you know what, I was drunk. I was on painkillers, you know, something, anything. And I guess the people over at the Borowitz Report, I guess he sent them a letter addressed to the American people from Rick Perry. Dear American, okay, look at it. There are three things I forgot to mention last night. First, you should never drink before a debate. Right after that dang thing was over, I had to stick my head in the porcelain throne at that lawn gnome Ron Paul's house. Had to hold my hair. This morning, my head hurts like it was hit with a hammer with one of those there movies with Larry Curly and, and then there's B, yeah. The American people have to decide what's worse, forgetting which agencies you plan to get rid of or forgetting which lady you tried to nail last night when you were running the National Restaurant Association. I can tell you this, if somebody asked me, I'd sure remember if I'd had sexually harassed, I could assure, I could tell their names. Yep, I sure could. Please don't ask me that, though. And finally, number three. What was number three? I got to tip my tongue. No, I've lost it. Oops. Vote for me, Rick Perry. A very nice campaign slogan. He has said he is not dropping out of the presidential race, not going to do it, even though he was embarrassed. Well, and look, at the end of this, you know, where my mindset is this is what happens when it's not your policy. This is what happens when someone tells you this is what you need to do to win. When someone puts something in front of you and tells you, now you need to remember this. If this was something he truly believed, if it was part of his core fabric, like I believe Ron Paul firmly believes that you get rid of his five agencies. And he could recite them while drowning in vodka and Jell-O, upside down and backwards. And I'm sure he could. Perry, not the brightest bulb in the box. And, you know, you can't force feed the guy anything. And like I said last night, you know George Bush is jumping for joy going, what an idiot!
They don't like each other, but you know what? Some of these Republican candidates are that weak that it appears that they're going to take turns making mistakes. But the irony is the conservative Republicans are so against Romney that you would think Romney would be, he'd be way ahead. He'd be furlongs and furlongs ahead with nobody close to him. But he's not when you look at the polls.
Yeah, well, old Romney care. I think that's his part. And if you look at what happened today and the article that was in the, I think it was yesterday's New York Times, talking about the Herman Cain trend. Evidently, he's hired a big high-priced attorney, a guy named L. Lynn Wood. He's the guy who represented Kobe Bryant and the JonBenet Ramsey family. So he's a high-priced guy. He's come out and said, you know, if anyone else wants to go after Herman for sexual harassment, you better think twice. Because they're going to do what they've done to these two women so far, which, you know, they're trying to say that what's going on with Herman is a high-tech lynching. Well, this is a high-tech rape, what they're doing to these women, going through every last little bit of their lives. And I look at that guy, Lindball, who, again, I shouldn't say that. Just because you come back from a place like Thailand with Viagra, I shouldn't have. It's Jerry Sandusky Day, so I should not be thinking Viagra, Thailand, Limbaugh. I shouldn't be thinking that. So I'm not going to say it. You make whatever inferences you need. But he came out today and called one of the women. Her name's Bialik, Sharon Bialik. He calls her Bialik. Oh, so funny and clever. So funny and clever he is. And he went after the other woman, said that she has a pattern of whining. Yeah, because every woman likes to have their head rammed into someone's crotch. You know, I think that's a good thing. But she's whining. And if you look at the Drudge Report, they went out and they said, well, you know, Ms. Bialik, she lived in the same building as David Axelrod. She's working for Obama. Turns out, though, according to the Treasury Department, she's in a non-political job where she served under the Bush administration. So guess, facts. The New York Post on Tuesday said that the woman was a gold digger and she flirted like a tart. Not quite sure what that means, but that's the New York Post, so figure that out yourself. And Limbaugh went on to say that this woman had some financial problems. And again, you know, the whole, what are these babes going to do with a panel? But anyway, this guy's saying, look, you know, we're basically going to go after you. And that's what they do, man. Anybody who's going to have the audacity to stand up and say, well, Herman did this or Herman did that. Much like, you know, the situation in Happy Valley there. I can imagine that, you know, the people who came forward originally back then feared that they'd be crushed. This is just, I mean, it's just really sad if you think about it.
But, I mean, really, you know, a guy like Sandusky counts on these young kids being afraid to come forward because they feel that they have no credibility.
Got an email during the break. You can email me, too, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Helen writes, you know, according to Internet news article I read, Curley and Schultz live in close proximity. She said, I wonder if the outcome will be a ring of molesters. She said, these guys and many are married with children. They hang together and they swap kids. I got to be honest, I sure hope not. She went on to say that you never know. Sandusky may have, you know, set that thing up so that you'd have this ring there in Center County. And you got to wonder, I mean, people are throwing out the idea that that district attorney was disappeared. Could that possibly be? And then she also points out the fact that his children, Sandusky's children, have taken out protection orders against him for their children. So he can't even see his grandchildren. I checked it out. I looked online, and the folks over at WBRE in, what is this, Pittston, they come out and said, yeah, it's absolutely true. They went out and they got protection orders for their grandchildren. That tells me something. You know, a lot of people say, well, you can't jump to conclusions. It's alleged. Yeah, it is alleged at this point. But it seems that things are mounting, and when your own kids are protecting their children against you, somebody knows something.
Well, here's the interesting thing. The gentleman, the district attorney, Gregar, who supposedly is dead, he was declared legally dead by, I believe, his daughter, who had power of attorney, pushed that. But that's a legal thing. His body was never found. Interestingly enough, Rick, his computer was found in a creek, I believe,
yep.
Body of water. They did some investigating and found that he was trying to find how you could erase everything from a computer. And I know that's pretty difficult to do. Now, why would you do that unless there's some very, very incriminating things or things on there that you don't want certain people to know in your computer? I'm not saying this is exactly what happened, but people are raising that question, you know, is there a tie-in? There could be no tie-in, or there could be a tie-in.
Yep.
The timeline is there.
Yeah, it's all right there. And, it, you know, it's one of those things where you go, now people's minds start racing.
Yeah, but it gets better. There's people who swear that they saw Gregor alive.
In Iowa.
After he was declared dead. So the plot thickens, you know, and I don't know if it's true, but after seeing what happened the last week, hey, anything's possible.
Well, didn't we just talked about this? Well, it was a couple months ago, where they picked up some homeless guy in Iowa who refused to say who he was, and they thought, hey, this could be this guy. It kind of looked like him, you know, after a couple years of aging. So could it be that he faked his own death? Because, you know, maybe somebody was, you know, who knows where this whole thing goes. An absolute shame, but I got to be honest, I'm glad it's out in the light of day, and I hope there are people looking into this and going to get to the bottom of it. And I hope, you know, to be honest, if it takes down this governor, because after all, the Attorney General's office should have been involved in this as well. So be it. A whole lot of them.
Well, now the governor is coming on and saying, hey, you know, the board did the right thing in firing Joe Paterno, but, you know, that's a no-brainer at this point.
Just amazing. Just an absolute amazing. And you know, I go back to watching the thing last night where people are you know, basically just dancing in the streets, screaming, carrying on. Just nuts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So you look at the big debate last night. And I got to be honest, I was pretty shocked. That none of the Republican presidential candidates thought it was a good idea in Michigan, and you didn't hear any of them say it, that bailing out the auto industry was a good idea in Michigan. I mean, you're just less than an hour from Detroit, home of Chrysler and GM, that saved thousands of jobs and revitalizing parts of the communities. Nothing. In fact, you know, former Utah governor and American ambassador to China, John Huntsman, agreeing with Romney's position, he said considered to be the most moderate. I mean, because Huntsman, they say, you know, he's the most, I think he's the most dangerous because of his position with China. He said that the bailout was absolutely inappropriate and could end up costing the taxpayers money. He said this country is never again going to bail out a corporation. If only that were true. You stop and you think about all the corporations we've bailed out and all of the handouts that we give to them. You know, stop it already. I mean, had we not saved the auto industry in this country, you'd have lost hundreds of thousands of jobs, up to millions, because of all the ancillary jobs that go into the auto industry. I go home to Cleveland, where the Ford plant, a huge Ford plant, the big engine plant, for years was the engine to be had. It's a ghost town. And all of those little machine shops that surrounded it, up and down Brook Park and down Angle, all of those little shops, gone. Those places used to hire, you know, 20, 30 people. Would make, you know, one little part, one little component, one little thing that fed into the car. But they supplied family-sustaining jobs. Gone. All that stuff's over in China right now. And you look at the fact that the steel workers, along with this solar group, are saying, you know what, we need to make sure that we save some of this industry. We need to make sure that we are able to, oh, I don't know, maybe create jobs here. And it's the German president. This is the thing that gets me, it drives me just absolutely nuts. The German president of a German company is saying, hey, look, America, you need to save your jobs. You need to make sure that people can work. You got to stop giving in to these mercantilist policies. You got to stop giving in to this cheating country known as China. But our own government won't do it. And I was reading the Reuters report today, which just, you know, just grabbed me by the neck. And this is what they wrote. A U.S. anti-dumping probe into Chinese solar panel makers will undermine bilateral trade and harm global efforts to develop clean energy and cut emissions, according to a Chinese news agency. It said the United States was blaming China to co-set its own inefficiencies and incompetence, and that the growing strength of the Chinese solar sector was a result of innovation, efficiency, and hard work, rather than unfair trade practices or hidden subsidies. One of their top guys there said China's solar industry has leapt ahead due to its intelligence and its diligence. Mass-producing solar panels at reasonable prices deserves applause, as doing so contributes to the global effort to reduce emissions and tackle climate change. It went on to say, it has become a pitiful reality that whenever elections near in some countries, some politicians resort to China bashing with no sound reason to win votes. You know, I look at that and I go, you know, there are politicians who buy into this, and I think Huntsman's one of them. He says, it goes on to say, it said U.S. manufacturers were suffering because of an oversupply on the global market, not because of China. And it goes on to say that, you know, when the United States goes to its meeting, this APEC meeting, the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting in Hawaii, the U.S. is expected to press for lower tariffs. And they're saying, well, maybe if you want to do that, maybe you should set a good example. And again, I go back to this whole idea. The Chinese have it right. We're the dumb ones. The Chinese have got it. They're investing billions of dollars in solar panels. They're investing billions of dollars into alternative energy. We're the dumb ones going, well, we're not going to give loans to people. I say don't give them loans. Give them demand. But we're getting screwed in this, Jake, and at the end of the road, it's going to mean a lower standard of living for all of us.
Well, what's troubling, and I've run into several people, and I'm sure you have too, and you talk to them, and some of them from Europe, some are from all over the world I've met in the last couple of years, and they are amazed. They are amazed at how far we have fallen. They come over here, and they look at our healthcare system. They look at our lack of a jobs program. They look at the infrastructure that has left, and they are absolutely appalled. And these are intelligent people. And yet, when you talk to the Republican Party, it's more the same, more the same. You wonder. You wonder how far we're going to have to fall as a nation before we wake up. And that's why, in some ways, I feel like it's the last chance next year in the presidential election.
All righty, quick break. Right back after this with Peter Olney. Stick around.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Those politicians of, by, and for the richest 1% should finally understand that working people will fight hard to ensure the survival of the middle class. And the AFL-CIO stand with them.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka on the huge victory working people achieved in repealing the loss of public worker collective bargaining rights in Ohio. AFL-CIO election night polling showed majority opposition to the gutting of collective bargaining across demographic groups. The polling shows Ohio voters turning sharply away from Republicans and a majority of the voters holding a negative view of the GOP. The polling showed that Republicans lost the center and lost big among independent voters by attacking collective bargaining rights. Cincinnati firefighter Doug Stern.
As an active duty firefighter in Cincinnati, I'm so grateful to the people of Ohio for standing with firefighters and the other public employees to help keep our community safe and strong. In the final weeks of the election, we asked the question, who do people trust? Firefighters like myself, police officers, and other public employees, or politicians? Well, yesterday, Ohioans overwhelmingly answered that they trust their public employees and they want to let them have their voice.
Trumka says the working family, WIN, in Ohio, carries a very strong message to politicians everywhere in America.
The people of Ohio, from auto workers to teachers and firefighters to the building trades and public sector workers to the jobless, sent a message that will reverberate across the country, that politicians need to stop scapegoating workers and pushing an extreme partisan agenda. They need to instead work to create jobs for working people and to commit to restoring balance to our economy. America right now is having a conversation about collective bargaining and inequality that in many ways began in Madison, Wisconsin, and continued through Occupy Wall Street in New York and across the country.
In Michigan, working families, spearheaded by the Michigan Education Association, made history by recalling Republican State Representative Paul Scott. On the MEA website, they headlined the news by saying, "This is what democracy looks like." MEA President Steve Cook says Scott's recall proves that voters will hold lawmakers accountable for assaults on the middle class. It's the first time in Michigan history that a Republican state lawmaker has been recalled. Representative Scott was targeted for recall for deciding to support cutting school funding while at the same time taxing pensions and giving tax handouts to corporate special interests. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is cancer. This isn't a sudden crisis that's going to erupt out of the ground like some monster trying to eat us. This is a slow, wasting process.
I kept the promise till the vow got broke. I had to drink from the laughing cup. Stood on the banks till the river rose up. I saw the bride in her wedding gown. I was in the house when the house burned down.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, in Ohio, it was amazing watching union people, watching volunteers, watching all these folks coming from all walks of life out on the streets, knocking on doors, making phone calls, fighting back against the governor's massive overreach to steal collective bargaining rights away. And what I've been calling for the longest time is, you know, people getting out in the street, direct action. And we are seeing that in spades. And one of the areas we should be really looking into, and we've talked to groups around the country who are doing just this, getting into people's houses and occupying foreclosed homes. I don't know if you noticed during the grand debate the other night in Michigan, where they have a massive foreclosure problem, there didn't seem to be any Republican plans to solve the housing crisis that was created by the big banksters. You've got a whole party of candidates there clueless. The only idea was Romney's. Let it reboot. Reboot the economy. Reboot the housing markets, which means all those people lose their homes. People like him come in, scoop them up for basically nothing, and then get to rent them back to those people who lost their house. Good market solution. So what do we do? Well, let's ask Peter Olney, Director of Organizing for the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, the ILWU. Peter, thanks for taking time for me.
Great to be on your show, Rick.
You know, I look at this piece that you've written, Occupy Wall Street and Unions, How to Defend People About to Lose Their Homes. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Peter Olney's name. This is a starting ground. Start occupying people's houses.
Yeah, that's right, Rick. Out here in California, we've got over 2 million mortgages underwater, and many of those mortgages are held by our union members, and a lot of our members, particularly in the building trades and in our union, work out of hiring halls. So the hiring hall becomes now an organizing center to link our labor movement, our working class movement, with these home defense situations. So we're hoping to project that around the country and see other unions pick up the ball and run with it.
Yeah, you know, you made it, and my eyes popped out. 40% of the building trades members in your area. I've been told 30% in our area. Unemployed. And I'm going, you know, why is that? We've got all of this skill power. We've got all this manpower sitting idly by, yet we can't get a jobs plan pushed through to get those folks off the bench and saving their houses that way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, those 40% or 30% or 25%, whatever that number is, in whatever craft or trade it is, those are the folks that often are finding themselves underwater with their mortgages. They bought them at a time when the building boom was going on, and then the market collapses and they don't have work, and that mortgage they were making payments on is no longer possible to make payments on. So these are folks that are natural candidates for getting involved in the home defense movement. So this is the way to make that concrete link between the whole 99% movement and our labor movement. We have to find those kind of concrete links to make this a movement that can sustain itself.
Excellent point. And I think, you know, no better way of doing that, because, you know, we had talked to a woman, and I'm not going to say what union she was a member of, but she was a member of a union, and we, Brett and I, my producer, were talking, you know, why is it that you didn't have all of the union people, you know, basically just crowd her property so nobody could take it? And now here you are doing that, which I think is well, It's about time, but it's fantastic.
Well, we haven't done a lot of it. I mean, we're working on doing it. We've attended home defenses, but this process of turning the hiring hall into a launching pad for defending homeowners is what we're aiming to do. And so hopefully we can come back to your show in a few months and talk about our successes in doing that.
Yeah, man. Any idea of how many of the building trades members, how many union members are of that 2.1 million folks who are underwater on their mortgage? How many could be in that number?
Well, we're in the ILWU. We're a hiring hall union on the waterfront, and that's the process we're engaged in now, is actual assessment of how many members fall into that category, and that'll give us a pretty good idea of what we're looking at, and it'll give us a base of folks that we can start to talk to.
Yeah, because it's an excellent idea. I mean, you know, because unions have that ready-made membership right there to contact people. I know the steelworkers do rapid response. It might be something that they're interested in doing at some point. But at the end of this, it's about the 99% standing up to the 1% of these banksters who are robbing us blind.
Absolutely, Rick, and this show that you run does a wonderful job of motivating, instigating, and agitating people so that we do that.
That is part of the point. But the other part is getting people out in the street. Like, we were in Ohio, and And I got to tell you right up, I met a handful of your members, came from California out to Columbus.
That's right. We had 9 members who flew out with the L.A. County Federation of Labor to be part of working on the ground to defeat SB2.
Yeah, we had a nice conversation with a number of them, had one of them on the show the other night. And it's that kind of engagement, it's that kind of activity that I think is vital at this time for labor. And it's a way, I think, that we bring together the occupations and labor. Because, as I've been saying, all of the things that are coming out of Occupy Wall Street, reinstating Glass-Steagall, a media structure that isn't as consolidated, all of the things that they've run through, I think are things labor have been talking about for 30 years.
That's right. And we're finding our moment here. And who would have thought that a magazine out of Vancouver, British Columbia, called Adbusters, would be the ones that would launch the call and launch the frame that's created this kind of movement. It's a fantastic moment in our history.
And if it weren't for the one policeman who pepper sprayed those 4 girls, it probably wouldn't have exploded the way it has. And I hate to say it, but fortunately, it has exploded.
Yep. You're right, Rick. And, stay tuned, because we're going to power up this home defense hiring hall link. And that can really create a very powerful emotional picture of the crisis in this country and what needs to be done about it.
Well, let's walk me through this idea, because, one of the legalities, I mean, if you get 100 people to show up at someone's home and say, we're not leaving, what does this look like?
Well, the foreclosure process takes a long time. And a mistake some people make is, as soon as they're told by the bank that they're being foreclosed, they vacate. A lot of times there's a sense of shame about even talking about what's happening to your house. That's one thing the 99% thing has done, is broken down the isolation of folks. They don't feel like they're alone anymore.
Right.
But there's a lot of shame, so sometimes people just leave the house. But what we want to do is encourage people to stay in the house and force the bank to, to go to court and go to the sheriff and have them evicted. And then the sheriff shows up, and you show up with a crowd of people and make sure that they do not carry out the eviction. And in some places around the country, sheriff's departments have refused to carry out evictions. I think that happened in Cook County in Chicago.
And that becomes where the hope lies, because you don't want to see a situation where they come up with riot gear and shoot tear gas and rubber bullets.
Well, they'd be doing us a favor, as you said. What an outrageous thing to marshal that kind of military power against the homeowner.
Just to kick somebody out of their house. I remember Marcy Kaptur, a congresswoman from Ohio, it was a couple of years ago, and her cry was, show me the note. She said, don't leave your house until produce the document that says they own it.
That's exactly right. No, that's the message we need to send to these folks. And God bless her for saying it 2 or 3 years ago before this whole thing took off.
Yeah, I remember we had talked to a guy who, his son was coming home from Iraq the day they were kicking him out of his house.
Yeah.
And there were, I think there were 20, 30 people there who stopped it on that day. And I'm not quite sure if that's gone forward at this point. But I remember thinking, man, here's this kid who's serving the country, somebody that we're calling a hero, coming home to his family being thrown out of their house.
Yeah. Well, the home defense I participated in San Francisco was a pretty dramatic event. A year ago, we would have scraped to get 15 or 20 people out there. There were 100 people out there. The Occupy San Francisco folks showed up. The politicians were there. Every electronic media outlet in the Bay Area. And these folks from ACE have this thing down to a science. They hold up a giant cue card with the phone number of the bank president, and everyone flips open their cell phones and starts calling. So we had 100 calls into the bank that was trying to, carry out this eviction. So it's a powerful organizing tool, and it's so basic to people's existence that it's really a beautiful way to dramatize this 99%, 1% split.
It sounds great. Let me ask you the last question I've got. How do we, I don't know that we want to go that far if we don't have to. How do we fix this thing? What would you like to see happen? I mean, someone called in earlier and said, hey, did you see that the FDIC is going to be saddled with all of this stuff, $75 trillion worth of liability, which I hope doesn't happen. But where do we go with this? What do you see being, since the Republican presidential candidates have nothing, what's the answer here?
Well, you talked about Glass-Steagall. That's an important part, reinstituting basic New Deal legislation that creates a firewall between, you know, investment and commercial banking. That's a very important move to make. I would think we might want to think about some kind of national banking system. You know, banking is like other services is too important and too crucial to be left to the whims and caprices of private investors and private citizens. Let's nationalize the banks. I think we have a state bank in one of the Dakotas, which has actually insulated them from some of these crises. So, I think that's the kind of stuff we need to start thinking about. You know, these kind of dramatic situations in desperate times call out for dramatic solutions.
And as I called for the day after everything collapsed, back September of 2008, I said, you nationalize the bank, you set up, like they did after the Great Depression, set up the Home Ownership Loan Corporation. You buy all those troubled mortgages up at market value with a low rate. You take a haircut for the banks, and it pays itself off over 30 years. We stabilize everything, and the free fall stops.
Yeah, I'm with you, Rick.
But we chose the different path. We chose bailing out the bankers, and we got sold out.
We socialized their losses.
Yep. Peter Olding, always great talking to you, director of...
Yeah, great talking to you, Rick. And how's the weather in Harrisburg?
Raining.
All right, man. Well, listen, you come out to the Bay Area, give me a holler, and we'll host your show here at the ILWU.
Look forward to it. Thanks so much, Peter.
Okay. Good night, brother.
Peter Olney, our good friend, director of organizing for the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, ILWU. We're going to take a quick break. Come right back after this. Stick around.
Values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
The Bible does not say that money is the root of all evil. Rather, it condemns the love of money. Today, that insidious love, taking the form of greed and excess, is celebrated in our country and has even been exalted into official public policy, marring our economy with inequality and injustice. The reigning ethos of our nation's upper crust is that too much is not enough. They're not merely out to make loads of the money they love, but to make a killing, everyone else be damned. New numbers from the Congressional Budget Office confirm that as the moneyed elites have been making their killing, wealth disparity has become extreme in a country that once prided itself on trying to build a more egalitarian society. Analyzing 30 years of income data, the nonpartisan CBO reports that the richest 1% of our population has enjoyed a stunning 275% increase in their income during that time. As a result, these privileged few have more than doubled the slice of America's income pie that they consume, going from 8% to 17% of the whole in just 3 decades. From whom did these richest 1%ers get their extra big slice? From us, the 99%. The share going to middle class and poor families shrank in this period, which is why there is such broad support today for Occupy Wall Street's We Are the 99% movement. At the tippy top of America's wealth pyramid are the multimillionaire CEOs and billionaire Wall Streeters. They are the richest 1/100th of 1%ers, less than 15,000 households. These few now take 6% of all U.S. income, the biggest piece ever consumed by America's mega-rich. This is Jim Hightower saying, the widening chasm between the rich and the rest of us is transforming our country from a society to a jungle, and not even billionaires will enjoy living there.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back back to the Rick Smith Show. According to new data from the Census Bureau, and you know, it seems like every day there's something new coming out of all of the census numbers that are out there. According to new data, though, nearly half of working women who give birth are foregoing paychecks to care for their newborns as employers become selective about granting paid leave. The data also shows that less educated women are nearly four times more likely than college graduates to be denied paid maternity benefits, the widest gap that has been in over 50 years. Not only does this harm the individual families, but it's also bad for the wider economy. As the report says, children are being born to families with less education and even fewer economic resources than they would have if parents were granted paid leave. And again, I go back to this whole idea that, oh, we need, we're such the family values people. Oh, we care about families. We care about children. We love us some children. All you hear from the Republicans is, oh, we love the children. Oh, gotta love the children. Jerry Sandusky may be a little too much. But, you know, the thing is, you know, if you love the children and it's all about the children, maybe paid maternity leave is a step in the right direction. Maybe if we respect the family, you know, we have family medical leave. So when my kids were born, I was saving up so that when my children were born, and I did with all three of them, took time to be home with them. That's how a family bonds. Those initial weeks are really the most important. Because that's when the newborn feels and smells and participates and feels secure in their environment. And I'm sure the family values people should know this. They should understand it. And, you know, I remember a guy I worked for who took over one of the places, one of the terminals that I worked at. And his big thing was he was a family man. Caring about the family. Oh, I love the family. What he didn't tell you was his family he was talking about. He could give a rat's behind about yours. And that's kind of how I see the Republicans. They love to talk about the family and how much they love children. Their children. They could give a rat's behind about yours. And again, you know, I go back to Reagan. I still remember those Great Society programs that fed children. You know, because we believe in the children. We want the children to grow up and fight our wars and die. So we gave them milk so that they would have strong bones, and we gave them lunch so that they would not be malnourished, because we need growing, strong children to go off and fight our wars. We believed that and invested in it. Then Reagan comes in with his nonsensical, oh, ketchup's a vegetable. And now you've got kids who actually believe that. Every meal, got to have slathered in ketchup because, hey, it's a vegetable now. But I love the family values people. Oh, they're so wonderful. They'll tell you how fantastic they are. They'll tell you how much they believe in family and marriage and all of that. And I love they're debating the Defense of Marriage Act. So there was a hearing today that's going to repeal the federal ban on same-sex marriage. And Al Franken was talking, and he said, you know, the suffering that the Defense of Marriage Act causes will cause very real, and it's very cruel. He goes on to say the Defense of Marriage hurts people who love each other and who want to make a commitment to each other for life. DOMA hurts people who want to have kids, adopt kids, and raise the kids to take care of them. He goes on to say that DOMA hurts people who want to save up and retire and live the rest of their lives together with some degree of comfort. He says it hurts families. And he says, Mr. Chairman, we need to pass this bill. And when we do pass it, straight people aren't suddenly going to become gay. Straight people aren't going to stop getting married. We're going to be just fine. Really. So, you know, you look at the end of this, and there's a whole bunch of people saying, oh, we need to keep those queers again, keep aside, we don't want to talk about them. And then steps in John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, who made the very, the very succinct Republican argument It's not about the nonsensical religious beliefs. It's never been about that. Understand it. Has nothing to do with their faith. It's purely, as I said from a long time ago, it's economics. They have a way of cheating these people out of benefits, and they're going to continue it. In fact, he said, this Senator Cornyn says, repealing the Defense of Marriage Act would actually increase the cost of Social Security that's already insolvent. It's going to cost us more in entitlement programs. It's going to cost us more in health benefits. It's going to cost us more. That's all it's about to them. Forget this nonsensical, oh, it's my religion. Get out of here. These guys have no faith. They have no soul. It's about how much they can put in their own pockets. Pure, simple. And want to talk about heartless? You look at the Republican-led legislature in Wisconsin. Their latest budget office projects that I think 65,000 people, nearly half of those 65,000 children, going to get booted off the state's health insurance program for the poor. And bring that back here, Jake. You had the adult basic. You had some other programs. The governor kicks them off. Oh, we believe in families. We care about children. Family values. Explain to me where the family values are in that. Am I missing something?
No, you're not. In fact, when we were out there, Rick, early in the year, if you remember, there were people collecting signatures because the governor was going after Wisconsin's version of adult basic. Those who made too much didn't qualify for Medicare, didn't make enough to buy it on the open market. And the governor was going after that, too. I mean, where does this end? This is the same party that opposes any federal involvement, doesn't want a national health care, but yet when you go back and you give that right to the states, they attack the states' ability to provide health care for their own citizens. I mean, I guess I'm asking a question. I guess I know the answer, and part of me doesn't. Where are they going with this? Don't they care? I mean, what's the answer?
No, there is no. They care about themselves. Figure that out. These people are the puppets of the investor class. These people don't care about you or me. They care about their political futures, and they care about who's filling their pockets. Understand that. These people are soulless. It's that simple. You know, and for me, again, you know, like a lot of things, it comes back down to your own experience. It comes back down to your own lives. If you've never seen a government program that you understand helped you, and a lot of people like to turn a blind eye, oh, I never got anything from the government, and then you start ticking off some things. Well, that's not the government. Medicare, that's not to keep that government out of my Medicare. No, it's a government program. Social Security, same thing. But when I was a kid, you know, my mother had lost the job, last one hired, first one fired, single mother, you know, difficult times. The early 70s were not good times for single mothers. But when I was 11, I collapsed of an asthma attack. My lungs had basically, I was basically drowning in mucus. Had it not been for the health care benefits that I got from the state, I probably would have died. Now, they say, according to Michelle Bachmann, they should do it for free because it's charity. And maybe that would have been the case. But would I have gotten the care that I got? I don't think so. So, you know, when we talk about where do we go, the question is what do we do with the least among us? And I guess, you know, when you talk about society, we're judged on how we deal with the least among us. We're judged on how we treat our elderly, how we treat our children. Do we protect our children? And we've been talking all day about, and in sometimes using Sandusky as a punchline, but at the end of the day, how did we protect our children? What does that say about the state of Pennsylvania? What does it say about us? What does it say about our students when they're rallying in the streets for paternal? What does it say about us? Because nobody was talking about protecting those kids. And I guess I just have a different view on things when it comes to that. to be honest, if it were one of my kids, but the truth of the matter is it wouldn't be one of my kids. Because that predator would know that my kids would come home and would tell. That predator knows that I would be standing there, or my wife would be standing there. They only go after the most vulnerable. And those are the ones that need the protecting. You know, I go back to, again, my own experience with a predator like this guy, who hunted me out as an eighth grader. Days after they bury my mother, here's this guy with his arm around me. And I never forgot that. Hated that guy, and I was happy and danced the day they put him in jail. Because he got exactly what he deserved. Now, nothing, and I'm not insinuating that anything ever happened. The guy put his arm around me, which quickly slipped down to the lower of my back. That, as a ghetto kid, game over. He's lucky he didn't get knocked out. But for most kids in that situation, they don't have that. They didn't have that. These kids were vulnerable, and no one protected them. And again, what does it say about us? That's what I'm frustrated about. And no, that's why I think all up and down the line, I don't care, the cop, the head of the police department, the DA, all of them, gone. And there should be laws in place. And I hope when Kevin Boyle puts out his piece of legislation, it includes the police department who turns their back. It includes the district attorney who turns their back. And you put them in jail where kid touchers are the lowest rung. And they're the ones who get treated oh so well with such kid gloves and such caring, which I'm hoping is Mr. Sandusky's future, along with the other ones. Just my thoughts, Jake. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk radio news service. Victoria Jones, right back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show.
My name is Toya. I'm a sales rep, and I work for Capital Food Cross.
If you're choosing Medicare coverage, Toya will meet you anywhere to help you decide.
I met him at food courts, diners, the parks, on a bench. And today, we're meeting at airport.
Mike was a Navy service person, an engineer, and a pilot.
I'm a senior blue PPO member.
He is technically retired.
I'm a gray-haired teenager.
Mike appreciates the visit.
It's more personal, and you can talk easier. You can show emotion, which you can over the telephone, and it's more caring.
Toya would agree.
I love my customers. I really, really do. My main objective is to show them that I care. When you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 1-888-340-3978, Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, a Medicare Advantage organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com, and I'm not going to talk about Joe Paterno right now. We're going to talk with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
Anything but Joe Paterno right now.
Yes.
Kind of where my mind's at.
Yes.
Let's talk about the president. What's he doing?
The president actually is on his way to Hawaii tomorrow.
Nice. I've never been to Hawaii. I hear it's nice.
I have been to Hawaii, and it's very nice. First thing tomorrow, actually, he's hosting a breakfast with the First Lady with veterans at the White House. And then, of course, visiting Arlington National Cemetery to participate in a wreath-laying ceremony and delivering remarks, of course, it being Veterans Day tomorrow. Then he's going to San Diego, and then he's going on to Honolulu, Hawaii. There is going to be an APEC summit, which he is hosting. Then he's going on to Australia and to Indonesia for this trip, which has been delayed a couple of times because of the oil spill and because of the health care debate. This is that long, long, long delayed trip, which is finally taking place.
Also, I see he kind of pushed the Keystone XL thing down the road a little bit.
Yes, he did. The State Department announced today it's punting this decision on the controversial Keystone XL pipeline until at least the first quarter of 2013. So this is it was a no-win decision for President Obama politically, so it is pushed until well after the 2012 election. State Department said it needs more time to undertake an in-depth assessment of potential alternative routes in Nebraska. And the president issued a statement saying that he supports delaying that decision. The thing is that in Nebraska, there are a number of environmental factors, as you know, as it goes through the state sand hills region and an aquifer, which is used as a key source of drinking water and irrigation for several states. Well, the pipeline's already been under review for 39 months. So, but the thing is that many people thought that actually it was going to go through.
Yeah.
This is actually a surprise to many people that it actually came down this way.
Yeah, I'm surprised as well. And as far as the water, just put it right through the middle of it. It's only drinking water. Who needs it? You know.
Well, but they're not going to do that.
And that's a good thing. I mean, at least somebody's paying attention. So we'll see what happens with this. I've kind of stayed out of it, to be honest with you. It's one of those situations where you can't win almost. I'm saying instead of building that, maybe we move towards alternative energy, put those construction workers back to work, building roads and bridges and the things we need right away. Just a thought.
Just a thought.
Also, the, quote, kill team on trial?
Yeah, you may remember this came up last year. This is Staff Sergeant Calvin Gibbs, who was on trial with a number of other soldiers, but he was considered the ringleader, facing a range of charges, including murder, assault, and conspiracy over the killings of three Afghans in separate incidents last year. The situation's staged to look as if the victims were combatants, and he was found guilty on all charges. He was led a kill team in Afghanistan. They murdered unarmed civilians, collected body parts as war trophies, cutting off, slicing off pieces, fingers, teeth, skulls. They took photographs of themselves posing next to the dead victims. In one of the pictures, one of the soldiers is seen lifting one of the men's heads by its hair for the camera and smiling. They took ghoulish pictures of themselves with dead combatants. But it was Calvin Gibbs who was the ringleader. And the fact is that this unit killed nobody until he arrived. He also boasted of things that had happened when he was in Iraq, but nothing's ever come to light about that. But he basically he played with the corpse of a teenager as if it was a puppet. He incited others to kill and killed himself.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's when you have this kind of thing, that's what you get when you try and dehumanize people. It doesn't matter who it is, when you dehumanize a classification of people, this is what you end up with. You're going to get a couple people like this.
Well, and I think this is, he seems to be the kind of man who, you know, in civilian life would be some kind of psychopath.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to be honest, when I first moved to Pennsylvania, I saw in the newspaper like an 8 or 9 year old kid holding a deer that he had just killed by the horns with the big smile on his face.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, it is what it is, and I see that no differently. So there you go. Lastly, last night, Rick Perry, as he said, he stepped in it. I'd say, yeah, he stepped in it all right.
He stepped in it, and it was really strange. It almost struck me as neurological. It was just bizarre. He was trying to remember three things, but they were three of his own ideas.
Oh, whoa. Are you sure they were his ideas? Because, you know, if they're your ideas, you remember them. If it's something someone else is kind of saying, hey, this is good policy, remember this. Because I'm taking the position, it's not, I don't think the guy's got two thoughts in his head, or can't keep two thoughts in his head at the same time. This is something that someone, you know, kind of pushed on him.
Well, that may be the key. And that's maybe why he couldn't remember them, that somebody said, okay, these are the departments of government that you want to eliminate, you know, commerce, education, and energy, as it turned out. But yeah. When it came to the third one, he couldn't remember it.
It was almost like a game show as you watched the clip. You know, people are shouting out, EPA! Yeah, that's it.
I know.
And it was pretty sad when the people you're competing against are feeling sorry for you because you're really screwing up that badly.
And they're giving you the answer. And, I mean, what he could have done is he could have said, yes, EPA.
Yeah, and he could have just run with it.
He could have got away with it.
Because nobody in the audience would have known any better. He could have said, you know, I want to do away with the Department of Tic Tacs. And, get rid of the Tic Tacs. You know, all the crazies would have gone nuts for it. I'll tell you. You know, did you see the video with Joe Walsh, the deadbeat?
Yes.
I mean, here again, I mean, another insaniac. I mean, and I guess I understand, you know, he hadn't eaten, he had way too much coffee, maybe.
Have too much coffee every day.
Yeah, or maybe he's just an a-hole. I mean,
I think he is. I mean, he shouted at this woman. He was unpleasant.
Well, I got the feeling that he's just an unpleasant human being.
He doesn't pay his child support.
Yeah, and I'm going, you know, and you look at the Family Research Council or whatever that Tony Perkins crazy group is, gave him the Faith Family Award. Really? You're going to give this guy a family award? Really? Is this the best guy you could find? What, you know, what was, you know, John Wayne Gacy busy that day?
Yeah.
Well, actually, he's dead, so I can't think of any other serial killers. Maybe Jerry Sandusky was busy that day.
There you go.
Jeez, oh, man, I had to get the paternal clip in there. Just nuts. Victoria
Oh,
Jones.
Dear.
Oh, boy, that deteriorated quick, didn't it?
It was inevitable.
Victoria, always great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. You guys are out in Ohio, and... some good figures, some good numbers coming out of that. The Hart Associates have been employed by the AFL-CIO to come up with some actual numbers coming out of the voting. They've come up with some pretty good numbers. Very, very encouraging. First of all, it shows that non-union voters opposed issue 2 by a 52-48 margin. Moderate voters voted no by an amazing 70-30%. Edge, and independent voters lined up against issue 2 by about a 57-43 margin. Very, very good news coming out of Ohio. But also, on Tuesday night, some other good things happened around the country which should encourage the labor movement and should encourage those who want to make real change in the country. In Arizona, where the citizens recalled Russell Pierce, he was the president, the Republican president of the state Senate, who drafted the state's extreme anti-immigration law. In Maine, voters repealed a new law enacted by the state Republicans to end a 40-year state tradition of allowing people to register for same-day voting. And in Kentucky, state Senate President David Williams, who is pretty much a clone of Governor Scott Walker, was defeated by incumbent Governor Steve Beshear. So there's some good things coming in that election from all over the country. Very, very encouraging, although we got a long way to go, but there seems to be some good things on the horizon. Surprise announcement, Rick. I believe you heard about it. Our dearly beloved local politician, Senator Percola, has decided not to run.
Well, maybe he's going to take all that money from the people who want to privatize education and, you know, go off, or maybe they'll offer him a nice position, a multi-million-dollar lobby position.
Well, he wasn't the most popular politician prior to the announcement of the reconfiguration of his district. First of all, he was the chief sponsor of He was the chief sponsor of the takeover bill emanating from the Senate that didn't make him real popular in Harrisburg. And then it was announced that his district would be reconfigured. And what they did, they took the most heavily Democratic registered district, obviously Harrisburg City. They took it out of his district, and they put him in very conservative rural areas west of here that didn't make a lot of sense. Under the new jurisdiction, he would cover about five different counties. I mean, it was so bad that even some Republican office holders, mainly in Cumberland County, are saying this is just an absurd example that's absolutely unnecessary. So actually, I was glad to see him retire. I thought it was pretty ironic he came out and was morally outraged about what was happening in Penn State, and yes, he should have. My point is, with politicians like this, their moral meter kind of only registers when it puts them in a good light. He kind of forgot what the Republicans did in the redistricting.
Two words.
What's that?
Good. Bye.
Absolutely. But I still got a real bad taste in it. And if I'm the Democratic Party, I would seriously consider taking that issue to court. Another ramification coming out of that scandal in State College, both our U.S. senators have supported Joe Paterno for the Presidential Medal of Freedom. There was also a state rep by the name of Glenn Thompson who had done the same. What happened up there, they were so appalled that they have rescinded their support for that effort. And I say, you know, I back that wholly. I understand where they're coming from. That Hershey situation with the J-1 visa workers a couple months ago, apparently it's been very beneficial. There is some leverage. The State Department has now come out and said as of next year, they will keep the number of J-1 visas at the present situation. There's an ongoing review of the process going on, although there are some people who are saying, look, that's not enough. The process itself needs to become more transparent. It needs to improve in a lot of ways. There was a lot of, not just in Hershey, but there were other J-1 visa workers all over the country that were taken advantage of, and instead of becoming a cultural exchange situation, Rick, it really became a situation where these people were exploited. And at the end of the day, the State Department has to come up with some new reforms to this J-1 visa program in the future if we're really serious about having young, bright minds from other countries coming into our country and working, and at the same time developing appreciation for this country. Back to you, Rick.
All righty. Well, let's take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. On the talk.
Save the USA, drowning in crappy life. Save the USA, and resume your taxes fine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s, when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast there, or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app. So the employer's unemployment compensation insurance plan is coming up for consideration, otherwise known as Senate Bill 1310. And again, it's another one of these pieces of legislation that basically written by the chamber, by the NFIB, by the big corporate special interest, so that they don't have to pay and you get screwed. So I'm telling you, you got to call your state senator, tell him oppose Senate Bill 1310 as it's written. Look, there've got to be better options than this steaming pile. There are smarter ways of going about this. So on November 14th, the State Senate Appropriations Committee going to be considering Senate Bill 1310. I say between now and then, get on the phone and tell him no. Because it's driving me nuts. You know, just like the Obama jobs plan, everything is piecemealed. And it's always the smallest pieces, and it's the ones that the Republicans really like. And that it tells you how weak Democrats can be sometimes. This is the same thing. We did the Senate Bill 1030, if you remember. And 1030 was better than 916, that Perry bill, which was just horrible. But it didn't do anything for the solvency. It did nothing. What it did is it cut benefits. It lowered future benefits. It basically, I love the press release mentality of it. We saved $120 million. We saved. It was savings. Try theft. I like theft better because it's a more accurate portrayal of what went on. These are benefits of people who get kicked to the curb through no fault of their own. This job was not lost. They know where it is. It's somewhere else, done by somebody else in another country, probably. And this is how people are going to, for a short period of time, be able to feed their families. And what we've got is we've got a Republican legislature here and a governor who thinks it's a good idea to steal those benefits back. Because actually they believe that if you're unemployed, you're just lazy. And they'll tell you that. But this doesn't do anything to solve the problem. In fact, I would argue it's going to make the problem worse. Insolvency in their mind is, well, how can we make that benefit lower? How can we make those people more desperate so that they're willing to take that minimum wage job? How do we do that? And I ask the question, where's the shared and shared sacrifice? If the system's that badly broken, the workers, they gave up their huge share, $120 million stolen from people. Now stop and think about that $120 million for a second, because it's important. That's money that used to be spent in the local communities. That's money that used to go into putting food on the table for families or keeping the light bills on, keeping people out of foreclosures or paying their rent or whatever, new shoes for the kids, whatever, that's not being spent now. So now all the negative things start to happen. More foreclosures, more people looking for heating assistance, more people looking for food stamps, more people having their power shut off and the whole structure that goes along with that. Instead of just saying, you know what, we want to have at least reasonable benefits so that when people hit a rough patch, they don't bounce off the pavement. Just my thought. You know, I saw this today, and again, it's one of those things that just makes you kind of cringe when you look at what the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and all of the things, all of the costs that have gone into this. This report came out. Evidently, we are spending $800,000 a year for every detainee in Guantanamo Bay. $800,000 per year. In fact, this Miami Herald feature said guards get combat pay just like troops in Afghanistan without the risk of being blown up. Some commanders bring their families, along to Guantanamo Bay, and each captive person gets $38.45 worth of food per day. Now stop and think about this for a minute. $38.45 per day. If you remember me last week talking about food stamps were $31.50 per week. So these people we've got locked up in Guantanamo Bay who have, color TV and who have, all kind of nice things where you can, satellite TV with sports and news and their religious, programming. They've got a wonderful library, 24,000 titled books with videos and magazines, all kind of wonderful things. And a new soccer field is going to be built, for the cooperative captives, and a generous meal, 4,500 calories a day, pretty generous. I mean, we're going to have some pretty fat detainees. Not that I have any room to talk, but they even have lamb certified as halal, which is the Islamic kosher, the Islamic version of kosher. So we're doing all of that. Yet, here at home, sorry, we're going to cut your unemployment benefits. Sorry, we're going to cut your food stamps. When I saw that, and it just popped off the page at me, $38.45 every single day for each one of the, I think, 171 prisoners. Yet $31.50 a week for somebody on food stamps. Kind of insane. And you look at the fact, $800,000 for one of these people to keep captive. What are we doing? Now, all it is a big open-air cell. I mean, it's basically just a dog kennel. And yet, 800 grand. You would think they'd be living in the lap of luxury. But I guess, we need to maintain that. Because they say, well, these are highly specialized prisons. Really? I mean, are those people any more dangerous than some of the most hardened criminals that we have locked up in our maximum security jails? I don't think so. And if you want to outsource something, well, I mean, we outsourced everything else. We outsourced going after bin Laden. Isn't that what we did with Bush? Can't we outsource these folks? It's got to be cheaper than doing it for $800,000 per person. Now they're saying they need to, they need a new infirmary. It's going to cost $750,000 to replace their health care little facility so that they get health care. Yeah, we've got what? Some 50 million people without access to health care? I mean, we have some really screwed up priorities. And what's beautiful there is, this is supposed to be a war zone, right? You can go to McDonald's. You can go through the drive-thru at McDonald's on your way to Guantanamo Bay. You can hit up the Irish pub. You can go to the golf course, go deep sea diving, beach parties, fishing trips. This is not Gitmo. This is Club Paradise. People pay big money to be able to do that stuff. And yet, here we are. Defunding education, cutting unemployment compensation benefits. This is just not the right direction. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But, you know, hey, good for us. At least we're doing something right. And lastly, last story I've got. Here in the state, they're talking about privatizing the state wine and spirit shops, and I guess they did that in Seattle, where Costco Warehouse said it will offer all displaced state liquor store workers an opportunity to apply for a job. See what your future is. See you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain. Democracy's coming to the USA.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Plant and end.